Welcome to the 9 to 5G Mac Happy Hour podcast.
9 to 5G.
Nine to Verizon 5G Happy Hour podcast.
UWB at the end.
UWB. Or if you don't have room in the status bar, UW. No B. No B. I didn't see that in the keynote, but you had a tweet that was like sharing a screenshot of what the best case scenario 5G will look like in the status bar. Yeah. And it's more intense than like 5GE. It's 5G UW, but the U and the W are stacked, and there's no B,
I saw that on the Verizon released an advert with Chris Rock, and so they like zoom in on the phone, and it said 5G UW in the corner. I don't think they actually showed that during the event because I only saw it when I saw the advert. Yeah.
And you're in the UK, so did you switch to Verizon in the US as a UK viewer of the keynote this week?
Oh, 100%.
It's worth the roaming charges, I think.
Yeah, I think the roaming costs would quickly recoup the $30 saving in about one minute.
Nice. All right, so we'll talk about the Apple event in just a moment. A couple of things to discuss first. One is a new product from Beats. You know, they make headphones. They're owned by Apple.
Beats is going away.
Well, yeah, they are. I had so much fun with that this week just on Twitter. If you saw it, you saw it. You know, I had a lot of fun with that. Basically, it was a tweet where it required me to tweet half of it. It was kind of like a cell phone. And then, like, the second half, the day later, it was like the rest of it. And it took a lot of self-control on my part. But
it was a good tweet.
Anyway,
it was good.
Thank you. So, Beats Flex replaced Beats X. So, they add FLE to it and a space. They look just like Beats X. And Beats X, if you recall, are the first lightning port headphones, wireless headphones with a cord in between that Beats released in like 2016 or so. Like it was whenever AirPods came out, because they were announced with AirPods. They had the same W1 chip as the first generation AirPods. They got delayed because I guess AirPods got delayed, and they eventually came out in like February of whatever year AirPods came out. And they've never been changed since then. They were $150, and they were $130, and then they were $100. So they went down in price by a lot. These are $50, and they're better. Like it's so crazy that they could do that. But you know, it just kind of shows, you know, if you keep selling the same thing for a while, it can get get cheaper.
I guess because the other Beats products they've updated, you know, once or twice since they, because you're right, it came out, they announced it in 2016 with the iPhone 7, because that's when AirPods first came out, right?
Yeah.
And then the AirPods shipped near the end of just like December of that year, basically. But,
And then Beats X became like February or so.
Yeah, but they didn't update the Beats X ever in that time frame.
Yeah, because they've updated Power Beats twice. You know, the Power Beats 4, Power Beats Pro, and then the new Power Beats
updates, obviously.
Studio's never been updated, so that still uses... Well, no, they did a studio update. Well, they did a studio release where it was like a Beats Studio with an Apple chip.
Yeah, because that was the first one to get active noise cancellation, right?
I think so. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, so Beats Flex, it's kind of... It wasn't part of the keynote. It was something that we knew about ahead of time because of the embargo. And I got a pair to try out on the morning before, or the morning of the keynote. And you think $49, these are going to be like really meh. But if you don't have like noise cancellation, you don't have transparency for the audio pass through stuff. They have the same W1 chip as first generation AirPods and Beats X at their place. There's no H1 chip, which is newer than W1. That's the thing that supports voice-activated Siri and faster switching.
You don't get announced messages with Siri either, then.
Correct. But you do get all the benefits of first-generation AirPods and Beats X that this replaces. The only difference between these and Beats X, besides the price, is the Lightning port is now USB-C, which is awesome. Imagine having USB-C on your Mac and like your iPad Air, iPad Pro. They kind of describe it as these are headphones for both iPhone users and Android users. And Android users are with newer phones are using USB-C. Man, this would be amazing if the iPhone had USB-C, but that's not the case. But I will say, like, as a port, it's It's so cool because they used to, these always use Lightning because there was never a micro USB version, but Beats before Lightning used micro USB. I guess they're using Beats now to say USB-C, not Lightning. The Beats Pill Plus uses Lightning, you know, so if that ever gets updated, maybe they'll do USB-C there. But for $49, these are, like, they come in black and yellow right now, and then they're adding gray and blue at the beginning of next year for whatever reason. And they come with, like, four ear tip sizes. If you have a new iPhone, you don't get headphones in the box now. So for $49, you can get wireless headphones that are really, really pretty good. I found just for, like, listening to music and stuff, they were pretty good. I never bought Beats X, and I heard that people who like were big fans of that kind of the cord between your neck that sat on your neck, and then like the flexible, you know, really light cord that makes the earbuds attach, that they were really good when they worked, and then they weren't very durable.
Yeah, so maybe $49.
Yeah, so maybe $49 is like that's what you get is, but it's a lot better than $149 like it started out.
You'd hope that they could fix the durability issues, because it's people would have them for like 7 months and they just completely break and not be used anymore, which is not very good for like an Apple product, right? Like most Apple products
are
supposed to last a long time, and very consistently, the Beats X would just, people would say they just die after like 7 months for seemingly no reason at all.
Yeah, I won't get to use these for 7 months. I'll probably give them to my daughter, and then maybe she can tear them up, and I'm sure she could do it in like 3 months if that's the challenge. But I was actually surprised by how good these things are. And the new thing that Beats Flex do that Beats X did not do is the ear tips are magnetic, which is kind of a Beats thing already, where you know, you put the two tips together and it kind of closes a loop and they don't detach from each other. Helps reduce like tangling cords, but they do a thing where there's not AirPod style the presence sensors where it knows if it's in your ear or not, so they don't auto play and auto pause when you take them in and out, but they do auto pause when you magnetically attach the two tips together like around your neck, and then they can auto resume when you detach them. So there's that, and then that's you also get like play. Yeah, then you get volume controls and playback controls on the wire. So for $50, and the packaging, they kind of brag about how small the packaging is, and it really is like tiny. Like the picture in the box looks comically small because it's way not to scale. It's like half the size. But Beats Flex, you don't get the ear tip, which was optional in Beats X. I'm sure that's just like the de-accessorizing and reducing, in Apple's view, reducing waste. So, but you do get the 4 year tip still. Just no tips.
I think it's well priced. Yeah. Like
$49.
Most of Apple's wireless earbuds are, you know, a lot higher price than that, and some of them are worth money and some of them aren't. Like from the Beats range,
if they were $49,
good.
Yeah, if they were $49 and just like horrible, then I'd just be like, forget those. But they were $49 and like, if I ever lost again, like I've lost AirPods before, and I didn't want to spend money on the current AirPods after X number of months or years, then for $49, like I'd just buy a black pair of these and just settle with them. Because they're still wireless headphones, you know, they're Bluetooth headphones. So.
Yeah, like if I lost my AirPods tomorrow, I wouldn't want to go out and buy new AirPods yet, because I'm pretty sure there's going to be a third gen one, like March time. But
yeah,
I kind of want headphones, right? And you don't really, unless you buy like, you know, the $15 like Amazon cheapos or whatever, which are fine. But you know, they're wired and whatnot. If you want wireless headphones, $50, it's hard to go wrong, right? As long as they have better durability than what the Beats X is doing, we just won't know that until, you know, a year's time, basically. If they fix that problem, I'd wholeheartedly recommend these to people, like, especially with like magnetic pausing and stuff. That stuff's cool, and it doesn't really matter if you don't have the H1 chip. You're going to have the most essential features with W1, and I think it's a good option. And I'm almost surprised they didn't like throw it in the event somewhere. Like, here's some Beats Flex headphones, right? Like, just you know, rather understated release, but I think they're good.
Yeah, me too. Beats Flex, who knew? And then iPad Air, this was announced at the September event. This is the new flat-sided, nearly full-screen design iPad Air, the first non-pro iPad to take on that design. Comes in sky blue and green and rose gold plus silver and space gray. This was announced in September with the Watch, which came out shortly after that event. We had a whole iPhone event, and there was no announcement of like when the iPad Air will actually be available beyond October, which was the first announcement. As of this recording, though, it's available for pre-order and releases on the 23rd, I think, is the date. It's a week from today.
Correct. I'm not rushing out to buy one, but I think they're, again, it's a good product at a good price. You get, you know, most of the iPad Pro design for a lot less money. And I think, obviously, you don't get Face ID, but the Touch ID in the top button seems a decent replacement. Is it going to be as convenient as Face ID? On balance, probably not, because, you know, there is something to say just being able to just swipe on the screen and look. But again, people have complaints about the iPad Face ID because you cover it up with your hands where you place your hands naturally in landscape. So it's a toss up. I think for $599, you get, you know, most of an iPad Pro, like the best bits of it, basically. The only big omission is no promotion, so you don't get 120Hz. But, you know, a lot of people get on with that just fine. And it seems like a very good option for, you know, the mid-range iPad, and I'm glad it's now available.
Yeah, I am not ruling this out as something that I buy in the future. Not yet, because of the other things that I'm prioritizing. But I would definitely buy either the blue or the green one. Probably the blue one. But yeah, this is a cool product, and it works with the second generation Apple Pencil like the iPad Pros do. Works with the Magic Keyboard if you really want to like spend that extra money to make it a, you know, closer to a laptop and everything. So pretty good product, and I'm glad to see that it finally has a release date. I think we thought it would be earlier in the month than October 23rd because it was announced in the September event where there wasn't an iPhone event, but it turns out it is pre-orders the same day as the iPhone and release the same day as the iPhone. So it was just a matter of, I guess, how much time to share on stage for a short event. So I don't know.
They probably wanted to, they obviously wanted to get the watches out last month, and they were like, well, the phones aren't ready, so I guess we'll just push forward something else that we would have announced in October instead. And they were like, well,
yeah,
iPad's up, I guess. Here it is.
Yeah, cool.
And it really makes the iPad line make a lot more sense now, I think, because last year's lineup where you had the 329 iPad and then the iPad Air that basically looked the same as the 329 iPad, it kind of felt wrong. And I know that version was only $499 instead of $599, but now you get, like, it's good to see progress in the direction of getting rid of the old design style, right? So you're moving to the gesture system, moving to full screen design. And I think last year's iPad Air, I wouldn't have told anybody to get because it just seemed too old for how much you had to spend on it, right? Like, if last year it was like, well, the 329 iPad's really good, what are you really getting for that extra, you know, $150? Not much. Whereas now, it's more a question of, do you really want the iPad Pro 11-inch? Why not just get the iPad Air? Do you know what I mean? Like, that's so, yeah, they've kind of flipped the scales there. But I think in the right way. And then I'm sure they'll add, you know, some more compelling high-end features whenever they rev the iPad Pro line, maybe either the end of this year or early next year.
Yeah, one reason I'm hesitant on this iPad Air is I'm sure that the next iPad, I guess there's rumors of, what do we call it, micro LED?
Mini LED, screen
type,
yeah.
Mini LED being the screen type on the big version, on the 12.9-inch version. But I'm also curious, like, what a refreshed iPad Mini will be like, because I think Ming-Chi Kuo has said that's due for the same screen type upgrade. And I think even that's the same source as saying that the screen will be bigger and we assume that full screen style. So
Yeah. Because the rumor from Kuo is the current iPad Mini is 7.9. And the new iPad Mini will be 8.9, so, and presumably that extra like inch of space will be met by thinner bezels. So,
yeah, I think what I'd be happiest with for an iPad is like a flat sided iPad Mini with that, you know, the current industrial design. So maybe that's what I hold out for. But this is a good like default iPad. You know, iPad Air used to be iPad Air and Air 2. Those were like, this was this year's new iPad. It's the best iPad you can get. And then the Air 3 was not the best iPad you could get. It was the best in that price. And now this isn't the best iPad you can get. But it's almost like, I know that the cheaper iPad is the more mainstream one because of the price. But this is a really good default to start with, I think, and then decide, do you go up or down or stay with this one? Plus, the colors are cool.
Yeah, I reckon you could buy basically any iPad at the moment and be happy. Like, oh, there are some product lines where you have to like tell your family, don't buy this one because it's not worth it or whatever. Make sure you go, yeah, you know, if you're going to buy one, start at the 600 one, not the 300 one. But for the iPad situation at the moment, they're kind of all great, really. So it's hard to complain. Yeah. App Figures is all about giving app makers the tools that they need to get more downloads and revenue. You may already know them for things like analytics and app store optimization. Now, App Figures can help you track competitors from how many downloads they're getting to how much money they're making, audience demographics, and even which SDKs they use in their apps. Their competitor intelligence features give you great context. Say a rival app adds a new feature or was mentioned in the press. With App Figures, you can see if that actually brought in more downloads. Got a great idea for an app or a game? With App Figures, you can figure out how big the market is and how much money you could be making with it. Whether you're growing your app or building a new one from scratch, App Figures has the tools you need to reduce risk and get more downloads. You don't need a large budget or even a data science degree to do this kind of thing anymore. App Figures makes it affordable and simple. On top of tools, App Figures provides a lot of guides and tutorials to take you step by step through gaining more visibility with App Store search optimization and increasing your revenue by learning from your competitors. They just released a free guide on that, actually. Head to appfigures.com/on/happyhour to try App Figures for free. That's appfigures.com/on/happyhour. If you like it, you can use our special code HH3030 to get 30% off for the next 3 months. Thanks to App Figures for sponsoring the show.
All right, let's talk about the event, starting with HomePod Mini, which is what the event began with. So how did this virtual event, live streamed but not live, like WWDC and like the iPad Air and Apple Watch Series 6 event, how did it kick off? I guess how was it different than the previous two, if at all?
Yeah, well, the September event, we mentioned how Tim Cook liked to tell us how he spends his day. So he did this big, long spiel about what he uses the watch for and then what he uses the iPad for. They were much more blunt on this one, I think. Like, Tim came out, he said hello, and then they were quite quickly into the products. It was interesting that at the September event, they very cleanly said, you know, we're talking about iPad and Apple Watch today, right? Up front at the beginning. At the start of this one, they didn't say we're going to talk about, you know, iPhone and HomePod Mini. They were just like, we got some great products for you today. So at first I was like, oh, are we going to have like more than two? Because leading up to, you know, in the days leading up to the event, it was kind of touch and go whether we were going to see, like, obviously we were going to see iPhones, and then HomePod Mini seemed almost as definite. And then it was kind of on the edge whether we were going to see like AirTags or AirPod Studio. And so when he opened with just, we got some great products, I was like, oh, are we going to have a longer than an hour and maybe have three announcements for one of these video events? Well, no, it didn't happen because neither AirTags nor AirPod Studio made an appearance. And it was just an iPhone and watch event, iPhone and HomePod Mini event. And they pretty quickly started with the Mini. Tim basically said how good the HomePod is without saying its flaws, and said we want to bring that experience down the line to more people. He was talking about how Apple's home products are going to be easy to use, better together, and then obviously secure and privacy. And then they had this really cool like CGI transition where they kind of zoomed in on the video and the HomePod Mini appeared, right? And it's this kind of like orb shape. And then as they zoomed out of the video, the HomePod Mini was on the stand that had materialized in the Apple Park room. Kind of like how they did with the Apple Watch Series 6 transition with Apple COO Jeff Williams, where they kind of had the video of the Series 6 being announced. And when they zoomed back out, it was on his wrist. They did that kind of trick again, but for this time it was the HomePod Mini now sitting on a stand in front of Tim Cook. And then they had an even cooler transition when they kind of like twisted around the side of the Mini to then reveal a mini room, like a miniature room with a little man inside it. And that turned out to be Bob Borchers, Apple marketing exec. So the HomePod Mini is very interesting, actually. So it's not just like physically what we know today as the HomePod, but shrunken down. It's a different shape, right? It's kind of like a bowl.
Yeah, and these leaked the morning of the event. Evan Blass had published them on the internet, and he had in sort of this order all four iPhones in all four sizes: Mini, 12, Pro, Max, and all of the colors that they would have, like marketing images of those. And then shortly after that, he had the HomePods, And I you know, we knew what the phones were going to be, but the HomePod's like, I would probably just picture the HomePod, but smaller,
yeah.
You know, maybe like shorter and narrower, but and not quite as fat. But this is like maybe like a fifth the size or so. Like it's a good bit minier, but then the whole orb shape makes it just look really modern. And the way that they kind of cut the top off to have the not screen, but where the tap buttons are, and then like the LED array that like lights up under the panel where that is. It looks nice and modern. I think it's cuter than the, well, of course it is as mini. I think it's more fun to look at than the HomePod.
It's certainly more distinctive, right? Because the big HomePod is just like a symmetrical cylinder, and that's literally it, right? Whereas this one has a bit more character to it, just because it's not wholly symmetrical, because they chopped it off at the top, right? And they don't have that chop off at the bottom, which is what they do have on the big one. I do wonder about that, about the touch surface area, because on the big HomePod, you have this like big expansive black area with the, you know, the capacitive volume buttons on it, and it lights up an actual
white
LED array, right? Like the lights are in the center, and if you look at a teardown, there's like 20 LEDs that, you know, shine different colors, and then they put like this opaque filter over the top of it, which kind of makes the colors, rather than being so sharp, it diffuses the light around, which is how you get that kind of, you know, glowing effect on the top of the surface. If you look at the HomePod Mini in videos, it doesn't seem, maybe it's just going to be a like that again, but I almost wonder if it is more closer to like a screen type effect, because the light goes all the way to the edge. Like you can't see the fall off of where the lights are in the center and then goes away. Like there's no black, right? If you look at the white HomePod Mini, when it's lit up, the entire top of it is colored, right? So unless
it also curves much more inward too, so you could do a better edge effect with that than you could on the current one.
That is true. Although if you look at the, you know, they have the X-ray thing of it, there isn't much space in that top area. So I bet it's closer to like an actual screen. Even if it is still LEDs, I bet it's more like a, like the LEDs are much closer to the top, whereas on the current HomePod, they kind of have the LEDs way further down the unit to get that diffusion, because there's not the diffusion effect, I guess is what I'm saying. It's more just like, I mean, obviously we only see this thing basically renders, right? But
yeah,
that was my impression. The top surface looked different to me than what the big one did.
This is how you redesign Siri on a physical object that's trying to do a Siri wave, as you have to physically change it. Another thing about how many it is, you know, first impression of the current HomePod is, man, this thing is like dense and heavy. It's 5.5 pounds.
Super heavy, yeah.
Yeah. HomePod Mini is 0.75 pounds, so it's less than a pound. So it's less than a fifth. It's less than 20% the weight. Like these will be like super light to move around, and you know, it doesn't react to the room in the way that the big HomePod does, where it will analyze kind of its surroundings and try to adjust the sound to the room. It won't have that feature. I'm not sure I've ever noticed that feature in action, like moved it between places in the room and like literally heard it change the sound. It's too subtle for me to pick up.
It's hard to know if it's doing it or not, right? Like you kind of just have to trust that stuff is going on. And I do think you get it a bit if you like, if you put the HomePod against a wall, it does. I've noticed when we did these tests when the first one came out, right? Like if you put it directly against the wall, it knows to like push the kind of backing noises against the wall and then reflect back. Whereas the vocals come straight forward, they don't get reflected off the back wall. Beyond that, I don't know how much, you know, spatial awareness it's doing, but this one has no such spatiality. But they've retained the 360 degreeness of it, because I think that was one of the big things that went underappreciated with the original, and you know, since obviously Amazon and stuff have, you know, copied the idea. Whereas the original, you could put it against the wall or you could put it in the middle of the room, and there was no directionality, because you know, traditional bookshelf speakers, they point in one direction, they push out that way, whereas the HomePod,
even like Sonos One does that, and Sonos Three did that, Five does that, where it's the I guess maybe you have like three sides of sound, but the back side is not sound, it's like a power cord.
Whereas the HomePod is like wholly symmetric, and it basically has what, like seven tweeters that are evenly around a circle. So it doesn't actually matter where you place it, you're going to get even sound all the way around. And they've gone for that effect here with the HomePod Mini 2, because they have like a 360 degree mesh, and they have one, they basically have one big speaker in the center. So then the idea is the sound gets distributed evenly. So, and a big question mark about this product is, what is it going to sound like, right? Because we know the big HomePod has, you know, that massive bass tweeter thing. It has seven tweeters that go around the middle, and then it has, you know, like, you do a tear down in the HomePod, it's crazy what it actually looks like inside. But this thing, it basically just has like one speaker and then a driver in the top, and then like passive radiators, which basically make direct the sound outwards, and that's it. So it doesn't, like, if you look at the Amazon Echo, the new Amazon Echo, which I can't remember, they've said
the default one for $100.
The one that looks like an orb. I don't know. Is that the new $100 one? The one that looks like a HomePod Mini, but not without the top bit cut off. Whatever that one's called, which is between, it's around $100 to $120. That one, like, they boast it has a tweeter and a subwoofer in it, right? Like, whereas this, they don't mention the word tweeter at all. Like the original HomePod, it's got seven tweeters. It's going to have the greatest sound ever. Apple's like, here's a HomePod Mini, and it has a full-range dynamic driver, a pair of high-excursion passive radiators, and that's it. So the actual, like, sound, how this thing's going to sound, is very up in the air.
Yeah, it's very much to be determined. It's certainly going to be a third the sound of the HomePod because it's a third the price. It's a fifth the weight. So it's you know, but it's such the right product to make because the original HomePod, you know, started at $350, now it's $300. But that is a lot of overkill for people who just want a smart speaker to mostly interact with, to control HomeKit, to do, you know, Siri that's not on the phone, but it's always there. At least it's always present. You know, and it can play podcasts. Like, who wants a $700 stereo to play a podcast with, you know, when you just want a little bit better than your phone or you know. So this is awesome. The original HomePod, you know, it's still in the lineup. I think it has its place. I think it's terrific. I can't see myself like putting one of those in more than one room, like a main room, as a stereo pair going forward, now that this exists, because you have all of the same benefits in terms of features. It's just the sound that is different. And in many cases, this is something I've argued for a while, is that the sound in the default HomePod, you know, it's 100% is you might not ever get to use that in certain environments. And there's a lot of environments where, like, just you can't change the sound of it on your own. And what it puts out is just overkill. So this is a much better mainstream product. And it was actually like the best keynote presentation of what a HomePod in general is, because if you recall, for the first HomePod, I think it was WWDC 2017 when they showed it, and it was before there was, you know, Amazon's voice assistant integrated in Sonos speakers. It was before Amazon Echoes got better sounding. And they were like, it's like a Sonos speaker and an Echo in one, you know, basically you get the best of both worlds in this. And then those got better before HomePod got released. HomePod had a very short list of features that it could do. There were tons of missing things like multiple timers that Echo could do, and HomePod couldn't do it first.
It launched, you could even like ask it for your calendar events, remember? That
got, yeah. Like
4 months down the line.
Calendar, I think, answering a phone call. It was super limited in terms of what it could do. It was very good at what it could do, but it just wasn't a big variety of things. And in the years since the 2018 release, it's gotten much better in terms of just every few months, here's a new feature that I can do. Even this year, where HomePod is like part of HomeKit, where you can have an announcement if someone's recognized by your doorbell. So that's a new thing even recently. And this presentation, if you didn't know any better, you would think, oh, wow, HomePod Mini can do way more than HomePod, because they're naming all of these different features that it can do, including Pandora coming soon and Amazon Music coming soon. But in this case, that applies to both. And most of the things that they showed for HomePod Mini, with the exception of the new intercom feature that we'll talk about, has been on the big HomePod. It's just the price and to a degree, just how good the sound is that the current HomePod, it was just too good in some ways, where it was too much for what you needed. This is going to be a whole lot better.
Yeah, and you can still do a stereo pair. They were like, we know that homes have multiple people, and so HomePod Mini can detect up to six different voices. It's like, yeah, the original HomePod did that last year. They were like, they presented a lot of it as like, we're doing this the first time, and then it's like, well,
yeah,
not really, not really. Like, in terms
it's
of
just the, there hasn't been a HomePod keynote really besides like WWDC updates.
Yeah, they like mentioned it one time that it was going to get multiple timers. Remember, like at the iPhone XS, I think it was the iPhone XS event. At the end, they were like, "And the update for HomePod, it's a multiple timer stuff." Like, but it's never had like a dedicated section. And I think what they pitched definitely shows like a bit of a change in focus, because the original HomePod, it was 100% marketed music and designed as speaker, music speaker. You know, a music speaker that you spoke to with your voice, and all of the
even the Siri features. Yeah, even the Siri features like Yeah, even the Siri features were like, it's not just a great speaker, but it can tell you about music information.
Yeah.
It's a musicologist, which is the first time I heard that word.
Yeah, musicologist. Because like the original HomePod was like, good speaker number one, you know, smart assistant number like four, right? That was like the priority order. Whereas this is much more 50-50, and maybe even, at least how they pitched it, right, is much more even, and maybe even slightly lean towards more of the smart assistant side. Because like the original HomePod, WWDC keynote, they used most of their time just playing the different sound effects of how it was filling the room, and they were like, we had to put special speakers in so you can hear how the HomePod will do it. This one, they had basically none of that, right? They said, obviously, a HomePod has to have amazing sound, and they said it's got, you know, these excursion radiators, but that was, you know, that was basically it. They very quickly turned their attention to, you know, controlling the lights in your home, announcing when there's someone at the door, sending text messages, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So at least how they've pitched it, they brought it more in line with I think what the market expectation is for smart speakers, right? Because you're perfectly right, the original HomePod, as good as it sounds, it's just overkill for so many people. Even if you can afford it, people just turn away from it because it, like, it's too much of a nuisance, right? Like, in our house, I've shown other people in my family, I have my HomePods in stereo pair in my cabin in the office, and my mum has said she doesn't want one in the house because people are going to use it too loud. It's going to blow her ears out, right? And there's no like volume control or anything. Like, my brother wants one from his bedroom, but his bedroom's quite small, and a big HomePod would like blow his, you know, blow out completely. Like, a HomePod Mini is much more suited for those situations where, like, if you're living in an apartment block, you don't want big bass response to, like, you know, thump through the floor and annoy your neighbors, for instance. Like, the Minis are much more universal, as well as being a lot cheaper.
Yep. And how many microphones are in the big HomePod?
Ooh,
that's a big part of what makes Siri. Yeah, that's a big part of what makes Siri so good on it, is that it's just packed with microphones, which is something that Echo kind of pioneered. They've got three microphones that listen for Hey Siri, and then a fourth one that they say helps isolate sound coming from the speaker to improve voice detection while music's playing. So this has like that. I mean, as long as they're not going to like one microphone in one direction, then as long as they're using multiple microphones, and it sounds like it'll still be pretty good with voice detection.
Yeah, because something I think the HomePod still like leads the pack on is just how far away you can talk to it and it still hears you, right? Like, And even when music, like I've got like an Echo Dot that I play around with, and it, if you're like playing music on it, you really have to like shout for it to understand you and for it to like grab your attention again. The HomePod, you can have music playing, be across the room from it, and like whisper, and it still goes, "Hello, what do you want?" Like, it can hear the Hey Siri from anywhere. It's kind of mental in that regard. It's when it gets to actually answering your request that it, you know, maybe falls down.
It's harder to do.
Yeah, so
can't do that in hardware.
Even if they get closer with this one, then they'll still be like leading the pack in terms of like microphone detection, right? Like, and
yeah.
It has an S5 chip, which will be perfectly powerful enough, right? Like, most of what the HomePod's doing is just sending your voice off to a server and then, you know, passing the response.
Yeah, if Siri works well in your Apple Watch Series 5, or SE, then Siri will be fine in terms of, like, computational power on the HomePod, because it's the same situation.
And the Mini can be a home hub. It can process HomeKit secure video. You don't have to worry about that. It's more than powerful enough to do that kind of stuff. The only like functional difference between the Mini and the big one, apart from the speaker setup, obviously, it's the U1 chip, right? Like, that's the only thing that the big HomePod's not going to get feature wise compared to the small one, because the
small one will be better at handoff.
Yeah,
because it's hyper aware of location between the phone and the HomePod, because it's UWB on both sides. Whereas the big HomePod relies on Bluetooth for that feature, which is not nearly as specific.
Although it still actually works quite well. Like, they didn't mention that the big one does have her hand off. And when it's working, it works fine. Like, I have problems with it where some, like, it can go, like, a few weeks where, for whatever reason, it's not detected in my device. But when it's in, like, the working mode, you know, you tap your phone near the top of it and it immediately switches over. Like, it works great.
Yeah.
They are doing some nice stuff with the U1 version. Like, I don't know if you call it this, but what they're doing is, like, you hold your phone nearish to the HomePod and you'll get basically, like, a lock screen notification in the little, like, capsule at the top, and as you then move your phone the extra like 10 centimeters to activate it, the little bubble gets bigger, so like it grows as you approach it, which is something they wouldn't be able to do with Bluetooth, right, because it doesn't have that precision,
right.
But they can do with ultra wideband, so you get a really nice little like bloop, so it, and so the bubble gets bigger, and then when it's finding the activation range, it like zooms up to full screen and you get like the, you know, the now playing UI, and it even puts like the alarms on there as well for easy access, so there is a nice implementation.
Yeah, this looks very cool. And then there's a new intercom feature, which, you know, we talked about on Happy Hour a couple of years ago, where I was deep into Echo and had a Dot in every bedroom and then bigger Echoes in some of the main rooms. And our family was very into the feature where you announce, you say the buzzword, and then you say, dinner is ready, or you know, you can announce, you can drop into a specific room and say something. Then there's intercom now, which lets you do the same kind of announcement thing to all HomePods. Does it do specific HomePods or just all HomePods?
They obviously we're waiting for.
We don't.
But they specifically say you can tell a room or you can tell the entire house. That's what they said in the video. So.
Okay, and it's not just HomePods either. It's HomePods plus Apple Watch, iPhone, AirPods, iPad, and CarPlay. Which, I mean, it's your phone, but doesn't automatically means it works. So in this case, you can announce something, and there's like a user interface for it on the phone, the iPad, and the watch, and I imagine on CarPlay. So that's something that Echo couldn't do without, you know, everyone having the Echo app installed if they wanted to even pull it off. And here it'll be part of the HomePod Mini and the big HomePod.
Yeah. Says it can target a specific room or a specific zone or multiple rooms throughout the home. So you,
so zone being like upstairs, correct. Downstairs, yeah. So you inside, could, outside.
Tell everyone upstairs that dinner's ready to come down, for instance, which is
that's
really
cool.
Nice. I don't know how that command then like coalesces with the iPhone, iPad, Apple Watch, AirPods, and CarPlay part, right? Like, because if you say tell everyone upstairs to come down, is it just going to target the HomePods? Like, what do you have to say to, you know, activate it onto people's watches and people's phones? Maybe you have to say their name, or maybe like tell everyone does everything. But like, that's something which we have to like test out to really know like the specifics.
Yeah. Like on, I think on the phone and the watch, even on the iPad, these are just like alerts that come in. So that's pretty cool. It looks neat. And then there's something that the big HomePod can do now, or will be able to do that the HomePod Mini cannot do, which is home theater mode from the Apple TV 4K. Not the 1080p version. Not enough power for that or whatever. I don't know. But on the 4K box.
It's because of Atmos. That's why.
Oh, because of Atmos. Okay.
Yeah.
So yeah. Like you're actually getting Dolby Atmos sound out of your big HomePods in a stereo pair. And then obviously it can permanently attach the sound to the HomePod when you're using your Apple TV. So that's a nice, you know, one more new feature for the big HomePod for the people who bought these in the first couple of years.
Yeah, and the website's a bit confusing here because there's a page which is like a checklist of features for HomePod Mini and big HomePod. And one of the lines is just called Home Theater with Apple TV 4K. And it's not checked for HomePod Mini, and it is checked for the big one. And I think, understandably, people look at that and they go, wait, you can't connect the HomePod Mini to an Apple TV? That's not.
It'll be like before, though.
So you can connect a single HomePod Mini or two in a stereo pair to an Apple TV and use and have stereo sound output like you do today with the HomePod, right? And it will just work as normal.
It's just a bit flimsy.
Yeah, but because you don't get the spatial audio support, you don't get multiple bouncing off the walls, because ultimately the HomePod Minis only have one speaker in them. They can't do any special directional stuff, right? Whereas if you pair a big HomePod or a HomePod stereo pair with the Apple TV 4K with the software update in the home theater mode, it can be the permanent audio output, including for like games output, music, and video content, and it will channel surround sound to the best of its ability, obviously there's only two speakers, but you know, it will try and use the space to give you, you know, Dolby 5.1, 7.1 and Atmos support. So that's the difference. You can pair a HomePod Mini to an Apple TV, but the home theater experience is like the surround sound immersion, and that's obviously exclusive to the ones that actually have multiple speakers inside them.
Yeah, I think Atmos is like mostly characterized by upward facing speaker sound, and so this won't be quite that, but they're certified for it, so it's more than not, I guess.
One other thing they're adding is hey, what's my update? Which is something that we've been asking for ages too, like the equivalent of the Amazon daily briefing situation. So in one command, you can get like the current weather, your calendar events, your reminders, any messages, notifications, that kind of thing. So you just say, what's my update? And it can obviously detect your voice compared to everyone else's and then use your phone to give you the right information. So that's something I've been wanting for a while, and they finally delivered it. It's kind of nice that the HomePod Mini has given Apple the motivation to actually like invest in these features. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, this makes HomePod all around better. And then in the Home app, there's a new tab in, I guess, iOS 14.2 beta that we're seeing, that was shown in the keynote, which is Discover. And this is a really good move for HomeKit because it tells you about HomeKit and which accessories work with HomeKit and how to acquire those accessories. So far, HomeKit has been like a support document on Apple's website and some stuff that they sell in the Apple Store, but not everything. And this gives you a lot more of an overview of the built-in Home app on your phone and like how to actually use it, which is cool. And maybe it's like a, you know, step zero to Apple doing their own bulbs or some other products in the future, as kind of rumored. But in general, it's a good move for HomeKit.
Yep. So that's kind of HomePod Mini. I'm excited. It comes in white or space gray. $99. You can order it November 6th, and it will ship the week of November 16th, whatever that means.
Yeah, so you've got not just one but two big HomePods. Correct. That's my case as well. Are you going to buy one of these and try it out?
Yeah, I'll definitely get one to try it out. I'll probably either give it to someone. It'll end up somewhere in the actual house, not the office. Like maybe Joshua's bedroom, so, like brother's bedroom or something.
Yeah, we've got two HomePods right now. They haven't been in a stereo pair for a while. That's a really good setup. We've got one in each kid's room, and because they love using HomeKit with Siri, and that's like the sure way that they can, no matter what. And so that's neat, and they love to play music in their rooms with the door closed and have like dance parties and stuff. But I also feel like a $300 speaker in a 3 and 7 year old bedroom is overkill. And so when the HomePod Mini is available to purchase in November, I will replace the HomePods in their rooms and probably like, you know, move those back into the living room and probably try out the 4K Apple TV home theater setting. But you know, we've also got a soundbar out there that's a Dolby Atmos, so it's not a big priority. I don't know where these will go. Maybe the bedroom, but I love the idea now that you can put AirPlay 2 and a first party Apple speaker and Siri input in more than one room without spending more than $300. It's awesome. I mean, for a stereo pair of big HomePods, you could buy 6 HomePod Minis, and that's pretty cool. I'm glad that they did this.
As long as it continues to lead, like I still think it has to keep the HomePod edge of like sounding the best, right? Because even 3 years on, the HomePod, big HomePod, basically has no competition. So fingers crossed, the HomePod Mini still maintains the best sound for its like price class, basically. So like, it's not competing with the $30 like Amazon Echo Dot, right? It's going to sound better than that. Mm-hmm. Is it going to sound substantially better than like the main Echoes, which are around 100, right? Or like the Orb one, which I think it might be the main one now. I can't remember. They switch them around. But like, is it going to sound better than them? Is it going to sound about the same? Like, either way.
Well, I can tell you how it sounds. It sounds amazing. It sounds impressive, and it sounds again amazing, incredibly rich and detailed acoustically. Big sound. So these are all from the press release, and I think it does matter that they're still pushing sound as a part of the HomePod experience, because you know, if these were like PC speakers, then they would just be like, it's a great assistant, and that's what it does.
Yeah, but, and they did have a section of the presentation where they were like addressing the fact that Siri isn't as good as, you know, Alexa or Google Assistant, without saying that Siri's not very good. Actually, a direct quote, as they said, it's going to have a world-class intelligent assistant, which probably a bit debatable, but I think they did have a section there where they were saying, look, we've made it faster over the last 3 years, we've expanded the amount of questions you can ask it, you know, drawing on like web search data and the web questions answers, that kind of stuff. And they acknowledged, I think, without saying it, that we understand this is an area of importance, and even if it's not like as good today, we're like working on it, right? Like, I don't think they're, you know, oblivious to that reality. So maybe we'll have to see how good this one is, and presumably it's going to be, you know, not quite up there on the, you know, just random trivia question part as like Echo and Google already have that lead by a mile, but they're improving, and if it continues to have the edge on music quality, it can very well compete as a $99 you know, smart speaker thing, because like HomeKit stuff, home accessories, I think Siri does the best. Obviously, interaction with your iOS devices, Siri does really well. They're adding Intercom. They got like the nice thing where if you ask it for like business directions, it'll almost suggest that to you on the CarPlay. Like all that stuff is, you know, it's in the HomePod's favor. The general like area of just random trivia questions, and then the speed issue where, you know, there's the reliability of Siri sometimes where, you know, sometimes you ask a question, it can respond to you instantly. Other times it will sit there for like 10 seconds and give up, right? That's the things that I hope they are tackling behind the scenes. They didn't come out with like, we now have Siri 2, which is completely different, but they did acknowledge that, you know, they've been working on the foundations, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the HomePod software update that was announced at WWDC, it's still not out yet, right? So we've still got the big HomePod will gain those features. There's the beta. It's not a public or developer beta. It's the Appleseed beta, which is invite only. And I think that process was a long time ago, like years ago. So that's we still have that to look forward to. I'm looking forward to HomePod Mini. I think, especially in environments where you've got close neighbors, it's the big HomePod can be a liability. And I'm so glad that there's something with the same features that is not going to be a liability. So cool.
Fall is now upon us in one of the most eventful years. Are your small business needs evolving? Despite the current uncertainty, one thing stays the same: the need and importance to have the right person on your team. When your business is ready to make its next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so that you can find the right person quickly. LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 690 million members worldwide. Simply start by posting a job title, company name, and location on the LinkedIn Jobs dashboard. LinkedIn Jobs screens candidates with the hard and soft skills that you're looking for. It puts your job post in front of qualified members, and it's targeted to show up for people looking for a job just like yours. LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. And getting started is even easier with new features to help you find qualified candidates quickly. Manage job posts and contact applicants from a single view on LinkedIn.com. Identify strong candidates with their efficient rating system. Everything is laid out in a single streamlined dashboard. And now you can do all of this from your mobile device, no matter where the day takes you. When your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. Just visit linkedin.com/happyhour. Again, that's linkedin.com/happyhour to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply. Our thanks to LinkedIn Jobs for sponsoring the show.
All right, and I think that's about the length of the keynote, so we're done, right? This is the show. we're an hour in, and that's how they do these things. iPhone stuff. iPhone stuff. We've got, let's see, iPhone. Before we even get to models, the feature across all models that Apple touted first was 5G support, and so they made a very concise and clear reason why you need 5G in an iPhone in 2020, right?
Does that reason start with V and end with N?
The Verizon stuff was ridiculous and confusing and harmful if you're trying to like just learn what about this confusing new technology, because as an AT&T customer, I was left with, oh man, is my iPhone not going to support 5G? And it wasn't until they showed the splash screen of carriers where it's like, oh, no, we're good. But there's still a big question of like, well, how does it compare? And I guess that's part of the whole like 5G process is there's different flavors and it varies greatly.
Yeah. I mean, first off, right?
What's your take on 5G? Yeah.
Yeah. You had Tim Cook come back and before they mentioned the iPhone 12 at all of any description, they made like, he must have spoken for about 5 minutes saying, we are bringing 5G to the iPhone. And you had 5G, you know, full screen on the Steve Jobs Theater slide. This is why 5G is so important. It's, you know, it is so good for speed and reliability and latency. It's going to be incredible. There's going to be so many things that you can do. And then it'll even like help your privacy because 5G will mean that you won't need to connect to unknown public Wi-Fi hotspots as often. And like, you know, I came in as a 5G skeptic. Like, already before the Verizon stuff had even happened, I was like half groaning. I was like, come on. Like, you've said how great it's going to be, but this is the exact same like rhetoric that all the carriers have been using this year, because the carriers want reasons for people to upgrade their phones, get on new contract plans, and then upgrade and pay extra on their contracts to make money to pay off this, you know, this massive investment they're making in cell towers. And from my perspective, the 5G situation at the moment is kind of like 3D on TVs, where like, you know, the manufacturers are doing it, but does anybody actually going to want it and use it? Like, I think it's left to be seen. And typically, or historically, when Apple has added features to their, you know, their prized products, they do it, they time it well so that it's actually at the point of where, you know, there's good distribution and it makes sense to do. And, you know, I went at this keynote today or this week, basically how I was feeling the week before, and they didn't give me any compelling reason as to why now is a great time to put 5G in the iPhone. Like, the keyword, but that didn't make me like compelled to be interested in it, right? And I really tried. I was like hanging on to every example they'd given. The security one was ridiculous. So, like, it means you won't have to be on public unsecured Wi-Fi as often. Like, hello? Like what do you want me to mean from that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean I thought that last year's iPhone should have 5G because phones, you know, two scenarios. One is you buy a phone and use it for 2 to 3 years. I think that's more common in the masses than you know, among us, but it's a thing that happens. Phones get handed down, they stay in use for a long time, and then also Apple continues to sell phones for a while too. Look at the iPhone XR in the lineup still. Mm-hmm. So adding it sooner than later is a good investment in the future of good iPhones, because you just know that the infrastructure is being built out, and so you know, it's better sooner than later. Nothing changed since this year and last year besides, you know, that there has been a good bit more deployment. But what changed in Apple world is that they were suing Qualcomm, and then they settled with Qualcomm, and they were able to use Qualcomm chips where Intel 5G chips weren't holding up. And so that's why we have 5G this year versus, say, last year. In terms of what they pitched in the keynote, because of the Verizon segment that made it.
Sorry, before we do the right. So you have Tim Cook have like 3 minutes to start saying the word 5G every sentence, and then again before they've even mentioned their new product, they get out Hans Vespo, who's the CEO of Verizon, and Cook says like, our teams have done amazing work together, and then this guy that none of us know, right, because he's not an Apple.
No, I didn't know him.
He's just a random rep from Verizon. Well, I mean, he's a CEO, but like, he wasn't recognized.
I didn't know that before the keynote. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, right. So this person comes out that isn't an Apple employee, and they give him, because I wanted to check, they gave him 4.5 minutes, and he's on his own on the stage, just randomly talking about like 5G technology. And it's like, now with the 5G in the iPhone, like 5G just got real, and then they announced like Verizon 5G ultra wideband with like 4 gigabits download speeds in quote ideal conditions. And then they're like doubling 5G venues in stadiums and airports, and you know, and then it basically seemed that they'd got them out of here just so that Verizon could say, we're turning on our 5G nationwide network today. And actually, if you actually read what he said, they are turning on the 5G nationwide network, which is different to the 5G ultra wideband network. So they didn't even say when that's coming. They just like put the big speeds up on the screen. So like, and at that point, it's like, I can't think of a time when, like, Apple is that basically a third-party company announced, like, the main feature in their phone. Like, you could literally turn off the live stream at this point and you'd have heard about the HomePod Mini and you heard about Verizon. It felt so awkward. Like, it was so weird.
How did you think about it? Well, my first reaction was, you know, aside from, like, panicking that the AT&T phone wouldn't support 5G, which is just bizarre. Of course they will. And, of course, they did. But it just reminded me of back when they would have AT&T people on the keynote stage to talk about the AT&T side of the iPhone.
Yeah, but they didn't always at the end, right? They'd, like, introduce the phones first, talk about how great it was, and then they'd do, like, just like the game demos. They come at the end, right? So, oh, here comes the...
Yeah, and I don't think it was 4 minutes either. And they were never great presentations. But they did that back when AT&T was, like, the only partner, too.
Yeah.
And so now they've got partners all over the place, including 3 to 4 in the U.S. that are major. And so, yeah, it felt a little bit different than in the past. And rewatching it, like, it needs a skip button because it is just, you know, it's about Verizon-specific service. As a little bit informative, I guess, because I didn't know about ultra-wideband in the context of 5G. I knew about it with the U1 chip and, like, the close proximity stuff, but I didn't know about it as a 5G flavor, which, you know, I guess I learned something there, but it was also one more layer of confusion. So I don't think the keynote did a great job of saying this is why you want 5G. Just assume it's available everywhere, but you had to pay extra for it, or your decision to upgrade your phone was based on 5G or not and nothing else. I don't think the keynote did a great job of that. And the Hans presentation, it wasn't like if it was a live keynote and he just, like, wouldn't get off stage and they're having, like, play the award music to say, like, you know, time's up.
Yeah.
It was a scripted and produced video.
Yeah, exactly.
So they probably cut it down to 4 minutes.
When Drake, like, got on the side for, like, Apple Music, right? And he clearly went on for too long.
I do.
And he was just, like, stumbling over his words a bit and taking massive pauses.
Yeah.
Like, that was a live thing. And you know that, you know, the Apple people knew it was awkward too, but they can't stop it because it's live, right?
Yeah.
This is pre-recorded and they can cut it however they want. And I was surprised they even did it at all because, like, we're currently in the era where it's so awkward to even get someone else on the stage because they, like, Tim had to, like, stand at the opposite end of the stage
super
theater
far away,
to, like,
yeah,
wave at him from across the hallway, and then he had to, like, walk off really weirdly. It was, like, for all different reasons, it was just the worst timing in the world. It was just silly. And one of the things you said they didn't give a good reason for why 5G is important, 100%. One of the things that Vance Hesburgh said is, together with Apple, Verizon has partnered with one of the world's leading gaming companies for some exciting news that you'll be hearing about later today. Now, he just talked about how 5G is going to give you, what, like 4 GB download, 200 MB upload, quote, in ideal conditions. And so when I heard that news, I thought they were about to announce, like, game streaming or something, right? Like something network intensive that was actually going to use the 5G network. And I go, okay, maybe they're going to do Apple Arcade Plus or something that does, like, console games, you know, something in that domain. Well, no, what it turned out with is about 15 minutes later, just as you've forgotten about the Verizon random stuff, they then said, together with Verizon, we're announcing today that League of Legends is coming to the iPhone. And it's like, what? Like, that League of Legends has come to the iPhone. By the way, that's not a new announcement. League announced they were coming to the phone, like, in January. It's been the thing going on the whole year. And it's an offline game, right? It's a multiplayer game, but you could play it on 4G perfectly fine. Like, and it will ship on phones
most
that are 5 years old, you know, phones today, and you can play it on, like, Wi-Fi, you play it on 4G. Like, it's the game is downloaded offline. It's just multiplayer, right? So you need decent latency. But if you had a strong 4G connection, you could play the game just as well. It's not a reason for, like, 5G to be a thing. It just felt like a weird, like, co-marketing scheme that Apple had been, like, forced into. It's like, this is the kind of thing you expect from companies that need the money for, like, co-marketing schemes, right? Apple's the biggest company in the world. They're way more stylish and they have way more taste. And then they were like, let's just have Verizon logos and Verizon shout outs, you know, every 20 minutes throughout this presentation. I thought it was, like, really, really gross.
Yeah, you expect that from carriers and their presentations and everything, but not with iPhone, not in an Apple keynote. I think there was also, like, two more things besides League of Legends that Verizon is using as their reason to have 5G. I think one is about New York Times content coming in the future. I forget the third one, but
it was the NFL.
Oh, yeah. Watching multiple games on a phone at an NFL game that you probably can't go to right now anyway.
They showed a screen that had 5 simultaneous video streams. Like, have they used a phone before? Are you watching 5 streams at once on a phone? No, of course you're not. You're watching one stream in full screen. Like, what do you want? Like,
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, people who are like fanatics about games might do that and like tap through each one to like.
I bet you could do that on 4G as well.
It'd be better on 5G.
You could do multiple. Like, you're going to be looking at the thumbnails to choose which one you want to tune into, right? And then you're going to be watching the video on 4G. Like, at the very end, they had the example about the medical thing, right? Where it was like, 5G's, they didn't say it in these words, but they were like, trying to position it as 5G's going to save your life because the medical doctors will be able to upload the brain scan faster than they would be otherwise. It's like, come on, like, please, like, you know, don't insult the intelligence, right?
They did mention enterprise 5G, where I guess it was that specific apps can take advantage of 5G. I don't know. It was an enterprise network.
It's like Verizon, enterprise 5G. Or like when they said they were going to put 5G in airports, like, I swear airports like design themselves so they don't allow exterior connections. They force you to pay for like the Wi-Fi, right? Like, I don't know. It just felt really, it felt like something that would have come straight out like a Google presentation, right?
Yeah.
Like,
the things where I hope that 5G. Yeah, the things I hope that 5G does do, you know, besides the theoretical higher speeds, and maybe even if, you know, theoretical is always, you're not really going to get that unless it's the best case scenario, which you're almost never in, but maybe the cap of actual real world speeds is higher than LTE, what you end up experiencing when this is broadly rolled out. And then the other thing is, with LTE, it's common in my experience to be in a high capacity area where turning off the LTE radio and switching to HSPA plus, in my case, to go to 4G, you'll go from unusable internet that just will not load to usable internet that's just not as fast as if it was loading properly. And so there seems to be, especially with ultra wideband and targeting places like stadiums and airports, that were their high capacity areas having very specific service for, you know, certain carriers who have the infrastructure there to serve that area. It's almost like the way I think about it is like if your carrier, you know, gave you Wi-Fi in that area and it was just really good, except it's cellular and they've got the hardware for it.
Ultra wideband is really good for like a stadium, right? Because it can have a really strong signal for a very small, you know, relatively small area that's very dense with a lot of devices.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah. The problem, and ultra wideband is where you get the super, super fast speeds, right? The quote unquote nationwide 5G is the sub 6 gigahertz stuff, which is more like HSPA plus kind of thing. And it's just like, that's the one that will actually be distributed, you know, widely. Like, there's a reason why the iPhone 12 is only ultra wideband in the US, and that's because basically Verizon's the only one going to be doing it in any capacity at all, right? So
So they actually are, in this case, the only one doing ultra wideband, which justifies some stage time. Not 4 minutes and all that they plugged, but...
Yeah, like, even half the stuff that the Verizon guy explained, right? Yeah. I was kind of primed for some of that, but I thought it just feels like it should come from an Apple person, right? Like, Tim Cook should be like, the iPhone's going to have 5G, and then not only are we going to support sub-gigahertz, the iPhone's so good it supports more bands than any other smartphone, including ultra-wideband. And then you can say...
And you're not going to hear Verizon say, and more carriers will support it too, because Apple could have said that.
Yeah, and then something natural would have been like, and the iPhone's like, the thinnest smartphone in the world or whatever to support ultra-wideband, and we are through today that Verizon is launching their ultra-wideband network, right? Or, you know, something along those lines. But that's not how they played it. It played like money had changed hands and they had like a quota of how many times they had to say the word Verizon. That's why it felt bad.
Yeah, and if you're a consumer who didn't watch this keynote, which I think is as polished as these produced keynotes are, I found this one to be the least rewatchable, and I usually enjoy rewatching an Apple keynote once from covering it and then once to rewatch it without covering it. And this one I found, you know, they had chapters on the website on Apple.com for like HomePod Mini, iPhone 12, iPhone 12 Pro, but I still found it just kind of difficult to get through point where I didn't do a full rewatch.
I understand, right? The market forces mean that Apple kind of has to have 5G at this point, right? Fine. But
yes,
I think they vastly overemphasized or repeated or labored over how good it is without actually having any substance to say it, right? Like, they could have covered, like, similar to how they did, like, 4G when the iPhone 5 came out or, you know, that kind of thing. Like, they didn't spend, like, it wasn't, like, the main feature. And that's kind of what they made here. They tried to prop it up as, like, the biggest change without giving you any kind of real world examples of any credit whatsoever, right? Like,
So if you're a consumer who wants to learn about 5G and the iPhone, and dig in deeper than just what, you know, 5G, the picture that Apple includes on the website for the iPhones, when you want to learn more about 5G on the phone, not just that it has it, they show, an Apple TV movie downloading, and you know, it doesn't really give you an idea because it's like mostly downloaded and you don't get an idea of the speed from that, but that's the context. They want to promote the idea that you can download entire movies faster. Then they say there's 5G. They say there's 5G. Then there's 5G on iPhone. So they want you to think it's different. And they say, we didn't just want to bring 5G to iPhone 12. We wanted to deliver the best 5G experience possible without compromise. So we had to do things a little differently. Then they say, designing iPhone for 5G. We engineered custom antennas and radio components for high sensitivity and incredible efficiency. Then we gave iPhone 12 the most 5G bands of any smartphone, so you'll get 5G in more places. So that's compelling. If you're concerned about 5G, then iPhone is a good 5G phone. Next, they say software optimizations. We looked at our entire software stack from applications to system-level frameworks and optimized it to take advantage of 5G. For example, many apps will benefit from 5G without using additional power. Okay, that's interesting. Then there's conserves battery life with smart data mode, smart data being capitalized. 5G on iPhones isn't just faster, it's smarter too. When your iPhone doesn't need 5G speeds, like when it's making updates in the background, it automatically uses LTE to save battery life. But as soon as speed does matter, if you're downloading a season of your favorite show, iPhone 12 jumps to 5G. Of course, you can always choose to use 5G wherever it's available. So that's interesting that I'm glad you have the option to not use a smart data mode, so you can just say, I always want the fastest speed, because why not? Well, I guess the why not is battery life.
Said it, it almost makes you worried. It's like,
yeah, that's pretty telling. Is that,
you know? that whole description you just had there of that feature, it reminds me so much of the Apple Watch cellular, right? Where
yeah.
The Apple Watch has cellular, but at any opportunity, the watch is going to try and not use cellular because it knows it's going to drain the battery.
So, and if you do use cellular, then you're going to dramatically reduce your battery life by a third or so.
Yeah, so like the Apple Watch will jump onto any Bluetooth that the iPhone has, even if it's a really weak Bluetooth signal, because it just always prioritizes that over actually using the cellular network. Yes, it has cellular, and yes, in some cases you can use it, but it's going to rely on the iPhone's connection, whether that's Wi-Fi or just the Bluetooth stuff, at any opportunity it can. And
so these are like LTE, or these are like LTE iPhones with 5G.
Yeah, and if the pitch of smart data mode is that it only uses 5G when you actually need it, I would say then you're not going to be using 5G that often, because you don't need it. Like,
yeah, I mean, their example is when you download a season of a TV show. So,
but you're going to do that at home when you're on Wi-Fi.
Yeah, so there's one thing that that they promote, and then
like,
I don't like
just
this.
Out in the middle of the wilderness, and you're like, you know what I need to do right now? I need to download a whole season of a TV show. Not, I'll just stream the first episode, and then I'll be at home later, and I'll just finish the rest of season then. Like, all of these examples just feel so fabricated. Like, I'm sorry. Like,
well, if you're in an airport about to go on an 8-hour plane, and you've got ultra wideband 5G, then that's
which you won't, because
the
airport want you to pay for their Wi-Fi.
Well, you're a 5G skeptic. I'm kind of a 5G enthusiast, and that it's kind of a mystery to me, and I want to like learn more about it and experience it, and then kind of judge it.
And you have 5G in your area, right?
Yeah, I'm moving next weekend to Orlando, and they're a 5G city. So by the time I'm there, I'll have the new phone, and I'll get to have a real world experience of an advertised 5G city.
Because here's the two like factors: there's can you get 5G. And what can you do with 5G that you wouldn't have done otherwise? And like, you basically have to multiply those two together to actually get the end result.
Yeah. But as a 5G enthusiast versus you being a 5G skeptic, which is probably more realistic, I still hate this last point on their website, which is, this is just the beginning. We also teamed up with carriers and performed expensive engineering and testing to optimize 5G networks. So far, we've seen amazing real-world speeds, along with improved call quality, battery life, and coverage around the world. This is 5G iPhone style. So that doesn't really tell you anything. It's like, it's going to get better. No data points. Like, they talk about battery life improvements, but I think that just means that it's like not as bad as 5G on Android, because they still want you to use LTE if you don't need the 5G speeds. Call quality, cool. I don't know that I've had an issue with that, unless it's just a dead zone. But 5G is not the savior of dead zones. And then coverage around the world. So I think that's answered by just packing in a bunch of radios. So when I'm clicking on this thing on their website to learn more about 5G, I don't want to know that it's going to be better in the future, because this is just the beginning. It's not a thing that you can use today.
Yeah. All of 5G is like future looking, I feel like. If they'd have come out and said, we're going to future proof your phone, we have 5G, I'd have gone, okay, right, that's valid. But they're like, they're more like the carriers where it's like, right now, you have to use 5G because, well, right now, you just
Is this a difference? Is FaceTime in HD over cellular a 5G only thing?
I thought you already I thought 4G added HD FaceTime, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, that's a pretty new feature anyway.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. I did watch a whole lot of Apple TV Plus on launch weekend at Disney World before the pandemic.
And you watched without it Wi-Fi on 4G.
On LTE.
So. It's almost like you don't need 5G. Because here's the other thing about how they did this presentation, right? So they had the Verizon section, then they announced the iPhone 12, and yes, it's, you know, it's got 5G. They had to mention it again just in case you've forgotten. It's got a 6.1 inch OLED screen. It's got the flat aluminum sides. They showed off the cool colors, right? And then, just in case you like didn't believe the Verizon guy, they got a different Apple guy out to again tell you about the 5G on the iPhone. And they were like, we've seen, Apple's done testing, and we see that you can get up to 3.5 gigabytes in ideal conditions, and millimeter wave is US exclusive, and you'll probably get about a gigabit in typical conditions. Like, so that's Apple's promise. Is that they're actually, you know, it's not just what Verizon's saying. The Apple person also said, we expect people to see gigabit speeds. You know, I'm skeptical, but if they get gigabit speeds, at least that's something concrete, right? Then there's the argument of what you're going to do on a gigabit that you wouldn't do on 100 meg on a phone, but that's a separate argument. This week, Happy Hour is brought to you by Declutter, the fast, easy, and free way to sell your old tech that's both smart for you and smart for the planet. With the upcoming launch of the iPhone 12, previous generation devices, on average, will lose up to 15% of their value in just a month following the launch. If you're buying a new phone, use Declutter to get some money back with their simple trade-in process. And with Declutter, our listeners can get an extra 10% when they trade in any Apple device and secure this price for 28 days ahead of upgrading to a new model in the coming weeks. Just tell Declutter what you're selling and they'll give you a free instant valuation. Then ship your items for free within 28 days and you'll get paid the day after your items arrive by direct deposit or PayPal. It's as simple as that. Head to declutter.com/95Mac now to lock in your special trade-in price. That's declutter.com/95Mac. A special thanks to Declutter for sponsoring the show. Do you want to talk about the actual phone? Because I think I've had enough complaining about 5G for the time being.
Yeah, and if you're hoping to learn more about 5G, I think that we just have to experience this. And so in a couple of weeks, I think I'll have some real-world experience with a 5G iPhone. And
I will happily be proved wrong.
What I'm seeing.
Happily.
Yeah. And there are more resources, too. So, like, we're working on a big explainer for 5G. Jeff Benjamin is for YouTube and 95Mac. And then there's a support document on Apple's website for wireless carrier support and features for the iPhone in the US and Canada. And this talks about where 5G is supported by carrier. You can also look at your carrier and their coverage map to try to get an idea. But it's one of these things where there's going to be news every quarter at least about 5G expansion.
There's going to be
an
Easter egg hunt for where you can get a gigabit download.
You just might need to move to a big city to experience it first. All right, let's talk about the iPhone 12 that most people will get to experience.
Correct. So it's 6.1 inches, like we expected.
Which is the size of the 11.
Your screen,
but not 11 Pro, yeah.
But because it's OLED, they've managed to make the whole phone smaller because you have thinner screen bezels. And they said that the iPhone 12 is 11% thinner, 50% smaller volume, and 16% lighter than the comparative iPhone 11, which brings it.
I love that it's OLED across the board. It's so good.
It's so good. And that like form factor size brings it really, really close to an iPhone like 8. So it's so close to an iPhone 8, and yet you're getting a 6.1 inch screen versus like a 4.7 inch screen. So it's really impressive in that regard. There's new colors, black, white, product red, green, and blue.
Blue being the new color there. Green's kind of back for the second year. Purple's gone. Blue's like the... they did say five new colors, and I think blue's like the new color there. But
Yeah, kind of got to me. the screen resolution is 2532 by 1170. Now, that converts to 390 by 844 if you divide by 3, because what they're doing this... So, this is very complicated, but the iPhone 11 was 6.1 inches, but it had a... It had the same logical screen size as the Max phone, because the Max would use 3x scale and the 11 would use 2x scale. So basically, stuff on the iPhone 11 screen would be comparatively small and dense. So you'd see like more text on a line. For the OLED phones, they always love going to 3x. And so what's actually happening here, if you switch from an iPhone 11 to an iPhone 12, you're going to see stuff bigger on the screen. It'll be sharper, but it'll be bigger and you won't see as much. So like you'll see less total text on the screen at one time, for instance, because of the way they've changed the resolutions around. So if you're like, I really like how dense my iPhone 11 is, well, sorry, now you haven't got that anymore.
Yeah, and this only affects 10R and 11 going to 12.
Correct. Yeah, because the 5.8-inch phone was already at that 3X size before. So on the 5.8-inch phone...
And this time it actually is bigger, yeah.
Yeah. So now you're actually getting slightly more on the 5.8-inch phone. But yeah, if you're expecting like iPhone 11 density in terms of screen content, don't expect that because that's not what's happening. Then they had a kind of... I'd say one of the few surprises was this ceramic shield thing. And they said that they've worked with Corning to engineer this new cover glass that does like... crazy subcrystalline magic that makes the front glass of the phone have four times better drop performance. They specifically said four times the chance of surviving a fall without cracking. So I presume a crack means like a big break, right? So a lot of there's been complaints in the last 2 or 3 years that Apple changed, or you know, Apple and Corning changed the glass chemistry to favor not cracking over favoring like fine scratches. So the screen got softer, which means that like keys and stuff can more easily scratch the display. But if you actually drop it, it's less likely to shatter and completely break. And the way they said it in the keynote is they didn't mention, you know, like scratch resistance. They specifically said four times less likely to crack. So the jury's out on whether the fine scratch problem has been like mitigated or whatever.
Right, my iPhone 11 Pro is really scratched really quickly. Like you'd think I ran over it with keys or something, and I didn't.
Yeah, because they've just changed how the screens, you know, respond. And to be fair, they have changed the screens. I think that in the way that makes sense, in that you know, if the screen like cracks, then you kind of can't use the phone, right? Whereas if it's just fine scratches, it's annoying, but you can only really see them if you like look at it closely or whatever. But ideally, you'd have glass that didn't do either of those things.
Yeah, and then next in the keynote, they talked about 5G.
Really? They talked about 5G a bit more?
5G.
And just a bit more 5G and Verizon 5G, I'm sure. Yeah, a bit of 5G. Like, basically, they had the Verizon guy do the intro, and then they were like, some people aren't going to trust what the carriers say, so we have to get an Apple rep out to say basically the same thing again.
This is when I learned that AT&T would have 5G on the iPhone this year. After the glass update.
Yeah, so then they did. So just in case you'd forgotten, the iPhone has 5G. And then they talked 5G. About the A14 Bionic. So in the September event, they had to talk about the A14 Bionic because it was in the iPad Air, even though that wasn't going to ship for another month. In that keynote, they compared it to the A12 chip because that was what was in the previous iPad Air, right? And they said it was about 40% faster. But in this keynote, they didn't compare it to the A12 or the A13. They only compared it to other smartphones. So their quote was, it's up to 50% faster than any other smartphone chip. Now, I don't know what you classify it as that at all, because you could compare to a $99 smartphone and be 3,000% faster. So who knows what they're actually comparing against when they say it's up to 50% faster than any other smartphone chip. They're certainly not comparing it against the iPhone. Now, or you could go, oh, that means there's going to be no performance improvement at all, like maybe if you're pessimistic. Since the event, there has been, you know, a few benchmarks and stuff leaked out that basically plant it at about 20% faster than the A13, which is basically what we expected given the stats they told you about the iPad. So in terms of CPU and GPU, the A14 is about 20% faster, even though Apple won't mention it at all.
Yeah, and it's still Bionic. What was the modifier before Bionic? There was only one other modifier. Fusion, yeah. So now we're still in that Bionic train for what, which seems to just be, it differentiates it from an iPad chip, at least, and maybe a Mac chip in the future. By the way, we didn't talk really a lot about 5G, but I can't wait for it to come to the Mac.
Right. You know, that is actually, at least iPads. But. Well, I think they could very cleanly say this has value if you had a 5G MacBook. Because you actually you do stuff on your MacBook that uses a lot of data.
Yeah.
So, if they do a 5G MacBook, you won't hear me saying it's stupid, because I think it's a clever idea. But
can I hotspot from 5G from AT&T?
I mean, I presume so.
Yeah,
oh, by the way, the other thing about the whole, you've got a gigabit internet download speed, you don't have unlimited data. You still have download caps, so you can be really fast.
Sometimes just for the 5G part of the plan too, right?
Yeah, exactly. So you can really quickly use up your plan. That's what 5G is going to bring you. Okay, I would stop talking about 5G, but Apple brought it out every other minute.
5G.
iPhone 12 cameras. it's the same ultra wide camera, but they've got a new wide camera. That's the 1X camera with a f/1.6 aperture, a 7-element lens, and that will let it have 27% better low light performance, which is great because I think iPhone cameras are pretty damn good, but they still, in low light, there's a lot of grain and noise. So if they get anything they can do to improve low light situations, I'm all for. They have a new smart HDR3 to improve picture taking, and they finally got night mode on all cameras. That includes the front camera, so you can take selfies without turning the flash on. And they showed an example which almost looked like the flash was on, so that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, so basically, I mean, the main camera got even better, which is really cool, especially in low light, which was already great. Smart HDR was really good, and I've been cleaning up my photo library, and like I'm going back to several years ago when HDR was. You also had the option to save the non-HDR version too, in case the HDR version wasn't great. And we've come so far with high dynamic range photos, where you've got the front, you know, in great exposure, and then the background in great exposure in a single image without like waiting a long time. Night mode on all cameras, you know. So before it was 1X and then 2X. But the half X version, the ultra wide camera and the front camera were not supported. And we basically said last year, that's such an obvious area for improvement on the next version of this phone. And here we are. So I'm glad they actually did it. And it just wasn't like a wish. Because like, I've certainly experienced that where I want to do the selfie one's probably the most applicable, but even the ultra wide camera, because I tend to use that more than I thought I might after the kind of the newness of it wore off. So that's a compelling thing. And then night mode time lapse. So that's, I think they even mentioned like using a tripod to kind of master this feature. But the idea there is you can do like the star shots, you know, where I think like Samsung or someone had a feature about this. And this is kind of their catch up to that feature, but I'm glad it's here.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then.
And is night mode time lapse, is that a long exposure photo, because there's time lapse video, which speeds up the video captured.
I think,
you know,
it
compresses
means time lapse video, but it uses night mode, so you can get like a really bright scene in the dark.
Okay. I was thinking it might be like long exposure, but either way, it's a cool
addition. The long exposure thing is basically what the you mean like a 10-minute exposure or something where you see like a streak of the stars, yeah.
Exactly right, yeah.
Yeah, they weren't actually very clear on this. Like, when I was doing the notes for the episode, they basically said, and we have night mode time lapse. And then they never showed, like, an example photo of it. But my interpretation was, it's like the time lapse mode on the phone now, but if it's you're taking a time lapse in a dark environment, they can use night mode to make it look brighter. That was what my guess was. But long exposure would be cool as well.
Yeah, if I learn more in the process of this recording, I'll update you.
Yeah. And then they had the section on MagSafe, which is bringing together all the rumors we were seeing for the last few months about the ring of magnets. Not really sure why they brought back the name MagSafe for it, but okay. You can get up to 15 watt charging if you're using the MagSafe chargers, because Apple can like ensure that, you know, it's closely aligned and they've done it properly. But it is backwards compatible with normal Qi chargers, just at the standard like 7.5 watt slower speeds. There's silicone cases, clear cases, and leather cases, and as you might expect, the magnets snap together. The clear case is the most ugly thing you'll ever see in your entire life, because
it's not really clear.
It's not clear.
A magnet. Yeah, it's got a circle and a line and like some kind of like a glyph format.
Yeah, it looks like a Spotlight search icon almost.
Yeah, I didn't quite get like why do they do that? But it's because it's where the magnet is in the case itself too, right?
Right.
You got the magnet
and they want you to
get
the charge while the case is on. So like
yeah, and that's how the case attaches versus like a lip that kind of seals it shut mm-hmm. on the front of the phone because
yeah,
they're flat
so they
on the front.
Snap together, right?
Yeah.
And the idea is you can have your like iPhone in a MagSafe case and then you can still charge through the MagSafe case. So they kind of need the magnets to flow through all the way.
Yeah, magnets.
Magnets.
Cool.
So the leather cases they announced, but they're not shipping until like mid-November. They do a thing with the leather cases have like a hole in them to show you the time. So it's a bit strange, but they like have a little like gap in them. So it knows that it's in the pouch because it's got the magnet attachment and it changes the lock screen layout to like actually show you the time in that little gap, which is, I feel like phones did that like 10 years ago and everyone thought it was a cool gimmick and then they stopped doing
it. Did they show these in the keynote?
Yeah. There's like a 5-second video of it.
Okay, because I can't picture it, so I need to like rewatch that second.
Okay, so imagine a pouch case, right, that you put the iPhone into, and then imagine a rounded rectangle cutout, kind of like the size of the AirPods notification on iOS 14. So you know when you connect your AirPods and that little like bubble comes down at the top, that cut out about a third of the way down the leather. And then you like tap on it and it shows you the time. Very strange.
Cool. Okay. But they also have a normal leather case coming too that's not the pouch?
I believe so.
Or sleeve.
Yes.
And I guess they call it sleeve.
Right? Yeah. They have the normal one too.
Cute. Neat. Okay. I gotta go back and rewatch that part.
Yeah. It was kind of wacky, but there you go. And then they also have a wallet. Yeah. So they have like a magnetic wallet that can snap on the back of the phone. That you kind of carry around with and you can put your credit card in.
It's a big departure from the Folio, which was what the previous wallet case was called. And now that was, it was a flap over the face of the phone. And now because of magnets, it's as miniature as it can be. And it goes to the back of the phone.
Now I have a question about this, right? So if you put in cards in your wallet, that's quite valuable. So you want the wallet not to fall off. So it's got to be quite a strong magnetic connection between the phone and the wallet because you wouldn't want a situation where you like put your phone in your pocket and then when you bring it out of your pocket, the wallet falls off, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what is the experience going to be like removing your phone from the MagSafe charger? Because if the magnet's quite strong, it's going to be annoying to disconnect it. Do you see what I mean?
Can you charge through the wallet case?
Yeah. You can charge through the case, I'm pretty sure. I don't mean like...
Weird.
I just mean with any... like so
With a card in there?
Like the existence of the MagSafe wallet means that the magnet has to be quite strong because otherwise the wallet would fall off, right? So just even whether you've got the wallet on or not, just putting your phone down on the MagSafe charger and then removing it. Well, with a Qi charger, there's no pull, right? There's no snap. So you just drop it down, you pick it up. But with a MagSafe charger... is it going to be annoying? Because it's like, is it actually, you're going to have to like lever it off with your fingers? I don't know. Like, hopefully it'll be smooth and simple. But that put like, as soon as I saw the MagSafe wallet, I was like, how strong are those magnets? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So it kind of reminds me of the Magic Keyboard for the iPad accessory where you kind of wish that it would. You could just pull the iPad off with one hand and the keyboard would just stay in place and not lift up. But then you also want it to like pick up the keyboard when you hold it by the screen because it is a top heavy device. And so there's not really a balance to strike there and to also have like it hold up any level or angle that it does support. So it turns out that the Magic Keyboard is just like way too tight on there or too strong attached magnetically than what you'd want if it was just like a docking stand and you put your iPad on it and took it off and left the base in place. It's that it's all one piece. So I would guess that it's super strong and that there's like some prying it off involved and that's the wallet experience. But then with the MagSafe charger, it's kind of, you pull it from the cord or like slide it off. And you know, if you give it some force and like slide it off of the magnet alignment, then it obviously just kind of comes off the rest of the way on its own. But I'm still skeptical, like, about, do you really put a credit card in there and then charge through that? Because I get that the credit card can be protected from the magnet side, but is it that you don't have...
They say the wallet is shielded.
Yeah, I get the shielded part, but, like, it the charge passes through? Like, you attach the magnet to the wallet, so it's, like, it's phone, and then it's case, because they don't show MagSafe on the phone directly, even though that's a supported way of charging the phone, is no case. It's probably that it will leave a ring eventually in time.
I think it's going to scratch the back if you do it bare. Yeah, that's a gateway.
Yeah, I think
MagSafe.
I think if you do it, I think like one time is maybe okay, and like people will do that anyway. But I think that over time, there's a reason why they're not like showing that as a way of doing it, even though it will work.
Yeah.
But you say you got phone and then case and then wallet and then MagSafe. I kind of feel like what you have to do is take off the wallet to use MagSafe, and that's
so,
like,
so you have to charge it. You have to take the wallet off. That is a pain.
That's my guess. And by the way, these aren't out until November, so the phones will ship before the wallet cases do.
Okay, well, if you have to take the wallet off to charge it, you might as well not have the wallet. That's my conclusion on that one.
Yeah. So yeah. And by the way, I did catch in the press release for the iPhone 12 that night mode time lapse is the video feature, because it's in the section with Dolby Vision, with longer exposure times, night mode timeline. So it's all in the cinematic section that it shows.
Gotcha.
So not a star streak, but a movie clip. So that's cool. Okay.
Yeah. So in addition to the wallet, they're also bringing out a MagSafe Duo charger, which is like two sections. One of which has a MagSafe charger, and one of which has a Apple Watch charger on it. Right.
Has the Apple Watch puck that lays flat by default, or pops up if you want to charge your watch with a closed band, basically.
And you can fold the Duo charger in half for like easy portability.
I think this is really cute. I think I'm more of a fan of this than you are.
I mean, I think it's fine. It's just like people are like, this is the AirPower substitute. It's like, no, it's not. It's closer to like what all the third parties have been doing in the years since AirPower, right? Like.
Yeah, well, I do think this is probably their less ambitious AirPower, Matt. I mean, it's their multi-device. It's their first multi-device charger, and then MagSafe is their first wireless charger, first party. I mean, even though it's not quite wireless, it's like it's as wireless as Apple Watch charging is. What gets me about MagSafe Duo is that there's one half for the phone, which I assume also works with AirPods, because. Well, it's that – okay, so it's that if your phone – MagSafe works with older phones, but not the magnetic part. It's just a Qi charger at that point, right?
Correct. Yeah, so that's how you charge AirPods.
Yeah, and so presumably the MagSafe Duo, the left side, which is for the phone, that would also charge your AirPods case the wireless case. Okay, so that's fine, because charging AirPods takes no time at all, maybe an hour or two tops. And so you can charge the AirPods, even while you're using the actual earbuds, put the case down and charge it, not have it be an overnight thing. Charge your phone overnight, charge the watch overnight or whenever you need to. But I think the best case scenario for MagSafe Duo is if both sides were uniform, they are both just like the left side is, not have that puck there that's only for the Apple Watch. And then it would be phone and AirPods, or phone and if it could power it, phone and phone, and make the watch work with either side too. So the watch, it's already got its own like mini MagSafe charger that it's had from day one. So make that work too as a charging mechanism.
They can't have a single charger that can charge all three products, right? That doesn't need two.
Yeah.
That doesn't need two separate holes. Because if the watch could charge with a MagSafe charger, I'd just carry a MagSafe charger when I'm traveling, right? And then just charge the watch on that. I wouldn't bother with a Duo thing. I just have one charger in the bag. But
yeah,
the watch can't
do that. Duo one, though, I'm very interested in it. I don't think we have a price for it, but I bet it's expensive.
I bet it's expensive.
Yeah, because the single MagSafe charger is like $40, I think. I think that's
and the Apple Watch, like, thing that lays flat or pops up, the old one, that's like $80.
Yeah, well, that's yeah.
So
yeah.
If you do, I don't think that's a very good deal. Like $150.
Yeah, but it's not available to purchase yet. They say that the leather accessories are coming in November. They do not give a date, or they don't give a year for MagSafe Duo. so
fingers crossed they can ship it.
Yeah. But when it comes out, like, I'm super interested in buying that, because I think the fold the folding aspect of it's really neat, because you do get the charging puck that pops up, goes down, folds in half. I imagine you can put that in your pocket. I mean, you do have the rest of it, like the cord and the brick, to worry about in like your bag. But I do like how compact it is, and I think it feels more like a travel accessory than, say, the current crop of 3-in-1 product chargers, you know, where you've got two slots for wireless and one for the watch as a puck. They're fine, and I've got one that I use for Mophie full time. Even when I travel, like that's what I used for AirPods, the watch, and the phone overnight. But Duo isn't quite there. I just wish it had those changes that I mentioned, where it was uniform on both sides and didn't have to, you know, specify the watch. Because what if you just wanted that same form factor, but for your phone and your AirPods, and you didn't care about the watch?
Yeah, exactly.
So. But the biggest thing there is, I think I mentioned before, like they can't possibly not give this thing like a release date. And even I thought that if they said like next month, that would be too far out to know. But in this case, they announced it and they don't have a release date for whatever reason. Supply chain? I don't know. But it's not hard to make, I don't think.
It's just a classic. Yeah. Want to skip the grocery store? With a lot of us avoiding outdoor trips at the moment, Sunbasket is a great way to eat delicious, healthy food without having to go out. Get Sunbasket oven-ready meals delivered to you each week. Sunbasket meals are made with organic fresh produce, sustainable seafood, and using meat that is free of antibiotics, hormones, and steroids. And their chefs have won Michelin stars and a James Beard Award. Why not take the night off and let them cook for you? Try delicious meals such as pappardelle pasta with wilted spinach, sweet peas and fresh ricotta, or southwestern turkey and sweet potato skillet, or maybe cauliflower macaroni and cheese, and there's much more to choose from. Meals come freshly prepared. There's no recipe to follow or prep needed. Put them straight in the oven and they heat up in as little as 6 minutes. All you have to do is heat and eat, which means no mess in your kitchen and far less cleanup than a traditional prepared meal. Sunbasket also has paleo, vegetarian, Mediterranean, and gluten-free options to check out as well. Right now, Sunbasket is offering $35 off your order when you go to sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour, all one word, at checkout. That's sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happyhour at checkout for $35 off your order. sunbasket.com/happyhour and enter promo code happy hour. Yeah. Okay, so then they had Lisa Jackson come out and...
On the roof of the building.
On the roof of the building. Park. This is her spiel about why they're removing the headphone jack and the charger. They basically just said that...
Not headphone jack, but headphones.
Yeah, the headphone jack's longer than the actual headphones. They basically said that customers in the world already have over 700 million Lightning headphones, over 2 billion Apple Power adapters, and... some people are moving to wireless, some people already have chargers. So long story short, we're removing these items from the iPhone box, and that will be the equivalent of taking 450,000 cars of carbon off the streets every single year. And they said, we're really proud that Apple is taking the lead, and we hope that others will follow. I don't really have much more to say this based on what we said last month about the when they did it with the watch, and that basically presaged what they're going to do this time with the phone. I think there's an environmental angle to it. Do I think it's the only reason they're doing it? Certainly not. Do I think the environment is the primary reason they're doing it? I'm even doubtful on that. Like, I think what we see this year with iPhone pricing is that the 5G components have cost Apple a lot, and to offset the budget, they've had to
and OLED.
I know OLED. Okay, yeah, fair. And then to offset that, they are trying to save money where they can to maintain their current profit margins, and one of the ways they're doing that is removing the inbuilt accessories. Simple as that. Because if they really cared about the environment, they could ask you at checkout, do you need a charger? And you could say no, and then you wouldn't get one. Or if they really cared about the environment, they wouldn't release the iPhone 12 at all, because that would save the most carbon, because then you wouldn't be making another phone. But that's obviously not going to happen. But anyway, I think it's silly, but there you go.
I think I care about this more for like family and people. I think I'm definitely in that camp of there's already chargers available that I use, including wireless
or faster versions of the
brick.
The phones come with a USB-C to Lightning cable.
Yeah, I don't think people have a ton of those available. Right.
I don't even have that many. Like, I have the chargers that I got with the iPhone 11 Pro because they've only been shipping USB-C chargers with the iPhone for 1 year. Like, the vast majority of those 2 billion Apple Power adapters out in the world are USB-A ones. And so...
Or 5-watt USB-A ones.
5-watt USB-A ones. So, and yeah, obviously, if you've got lightning cables sitting around, you can plug those in instead. But what you're going to get as a new customer is an iPhone and a cable that odds on you don't have a charger for. And that's going to be annoying. And then also odds on... If you want to use a wired headphones, you probably don't have lightning headphones sitting around the place because they haven't been out for ages and they break all the time. So often I was on like a 1 year replacement cycle before I switched to AirPods. If I was on the wired headphone lifestyle, you know, my headphones would just about last long enough until the new phone came out. And then I get new headphones with those. Like, I don't think people have loads of them sitting around either. And there's no headphone jack anymore. So your only option if you want wired headphones is proprietary. So you just have to hope that most people have now switched to wired headphones. So it's like a 1-2 punch of disappointment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. None of this I endorse. I don't think any of this is the right thing to do. It doesn't affect me as much personally, but just that whole thinking about friends and family buying these new iPhones, even the 12 and 12 mini that we'll talk about in a second, like, they're not cheap phones. They're not even the $650 phones that we used to have years ago. And so to not, like, I guess as it stands right now, you could probably buy a cheaper phone and have everything in the box, and eventually that'll get phased out too.
I think they've taken them out the cheaper iPhones as well.
Yeah. I mean, you can probably find them like with some with them in there in retailers.
Yeah.
In
some channel, but they're exhausting current stuff.
Yeah. At least it was rumored and forecasted, and they did it with the watch first. And well, you know,
I still expect there to be like national headlines of people complaining about it when these phones actually launch.
Yeah, I mean, we covered it, of course, as a story, even though like we knew months in advance it was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it was still like the most popular thing that day because it's a big change. It's kind of no good. You know, when they dropped the headphone jack with iPhone 7, there were some complaints that was like, well, now you got to buy headphones that work with the lightning port. And it's like, well, no, they give them to you in the box. They have lightning on the box or corded in the box and the adapter. And they've gone all the way of removing the adapter, fine, and then removing the headphones. Like, okay, yeah, that is what it is. We're probably not going to go back to a world where these are in the box. And the boxes are quite slim. You know, like, but I don't know about that either, because like the iPod boxes have always been really slim, and they've had at least the headphones and a cord.
Headphones aren't thick. Like, it's the chargers that make the boxes big.
Yeah. So, well, it's no good. What is no good is how they play the extra $30 if you're not doing a carrier deal of some type.
So just before we talk about pricing, because in keynote order, they now announced the iPhone 12 mini, which is basically identical to the iPhone 12 in every single way, except it's got a 5.4-inch screen. Like, there's basically no missing features. The screen resolution, is scaled, so you're not getting 1-to-1 pixels, so that's kind of a bummer. But apart from that, it's exact same features as the standard iPhone 12.
Yeah, I feel like if you have an iPhone 10 and you think it's a little bit too big for you, or that you don't want to go any bigger at all because the new iPhone, the iPhone 12 Pro is bigger than the iPhone 11 Pro, for example, and iPhone XS and iPhone 10, then mini is a pretty cool option because you're going back to about the physical case size of an iPhone 8. You know, going back to iPhone 6, but it's OLED and it's all screen design and everything. And so I think this is a really cool phone. Like, if it was the only phone that Apple made in a given year, it'd be awesome. I don't think I want the smallest phone in the lineup right now. And so it's like the least on the list of phones that I'd want to purchase, but it at least gives them both a smaller phone and a cheaper phone than iPhone 12, which went up a little bit in price this year, I guess.
Went up 100. So, well,
yeah, a lot of bit.
Let's address that.
It went down from 10R to 11, and then it went back. It went up even higher from 11 to 11. Yeah, so from 11 to 12.
The 10R was $750. The iPhone 11 was $699. And they announced, so after they said the mini is the exact same, they then went on to pricing. And they said, the iPhone lineup will, quote, start at just $699 for iPhone mini and $799 for iPhone 12. And they showed this on a slide with no asterisks or anything. It just said from $699, from $799. And they said something about, and there'll be special carry offers where you can get surprise, surprise, it from Verizon for only $15 a month. But the reality,
I think AT&T is cheaper per month, but yeah.
The reality is the phones actually cost $30 more than that. Like, if you want to buy the iPhone 12 mini unlocked, it costs you $729. If you want to buy the iPhone 12 unlocked, it costs you $829. Basically, in the US, Apple has arranged these kind of special carrier deals, which they promote on their website, and that's where the lower prices come from. But the actual costs of the phones are $829 and $729. And I think all of that comes together to explain, well, not explain, but it contributes to the situation Apple has, because their main phone before was 6.1 inches and it cost $699, and now the same phone costs them $829 because they've added OLED to it and they've added 5G. And I think 5G is a big part of the cost, because 5G is expensive to add. That whole thing, they're now having to do like every strategy under the sun they can to get the prices as low as possible. I would say one of those things is they no longer have to pay for the headphones or the charger. And then what they're also doing now is adding these $30 carrier discounts to try and make it look like at least it's only $100 more. And really, it's $130.
So it is, I'm so curious about how that looks for Apple. So they've got a set price on the handset being $830 in the case of the iPhone 12. And the carrier probably pays that. And so, is Apple's gaining more money here than they would otherwise? There's at least money changing hands from the carrier to Apple than there was that wasn't happening before. That's the likely scenario, at least.
Yeah,
because it's not just that they're like, go with a carrier and we're just satisfied with that, because who cares if it's unlocked or not? But it's, or if you buy it for a carrier and don't activate it, but they want you to buy it for carrier activation, I think, because. Is what they're pushing for. And I do think that it's just taken me some days to grow on and be comfortable with, but I do think this is a better option than not having 5G in the non-pro phones. If that's what it took was this kind of scheme, because most customers are going to just see these prices as they are and not the $30 difference prices. And if it was 5G or no 5G, and they did no 5G, then again, I'm going back to that. People that are buying these phones for more than a couple of years, or more than a year even, are you going to benefit from, you might eventually get to benefit, especially if it gets handed down, because these are all really good phones. It's just very un-Apple and looks kind of sleazy, especially when it wasn't in the keynote. It was a big surprise to all of us to find out.
Yeah, I think we have to watch the market to see how they do on like price competitiveness now, because yes, sure, they do have a $729 phone, but that's 5.4 inches when last year they had a 6.1 inch phone that was even cheaper than that. So that's a hanging question.
The 11 is certainly the best post iPhone 10 value phone, yeah, or flagship value phone that we've seen, because it was much better than even the 10R was. To go OLED used to cost $1,000, and now it can cost $729 or $700 if you activate with a carrier. It's a little bit smaller. It's 0.4 inches smaller, so not a great big deal. And they even tout, we really haven't spoken about 5G much today, but they tout that the iPhone 12 mini is the smallest 5G phone. Now, I'd say it's also like the smallest modern phone.
Yep.
I'm not sure what Android phones are doing lately, but I don't know that smaller than 5.8 inches is common in flagship phones. And so I think it's also like the smallest flagship phone. But they especially tout the smallest 5G phone, which I think is it's worth noting, especially long term, because I recall when LTE was first coming about, and I think it was Verizon with LTE, they had the HTC Thunderbolt, I think was the name of the phone, and that was a very big, like bigger than most Android phones at the time, phone, so it could have enough battery capacity to power the early days of LTE. And in this case, they've done a new technology with 5G and in a very compact size, smaller than they've done in the last couple of years with just LTE. So it's worth bragging about as a data point. Whatever.
Yeah. I think being able to do 5G in the 12 mini is a good technical achievement for sure. And then mm-hmm. they did the 12 Pro line. And actually, there's not much to say here because I think Apple was pretty generous in giving the vast majority of the features in the 12 mini and the iPhone 12. Like, there really isn't that much distinguishing them apart. Like, the prices are $999, $1099, so the price of the Pros didn't change. But what are the differences? So you get a stainless steel band.
They double the storage on the...
Yeah, you get a stainless steel band on the sides rather than an aluminium band, which is what the 12 and the 12 mini have. And then obviously you have the 6.1-inch and the 6.7-inch displays.
So the Pro got bigger this year for the same price with twice the storage, going from 64 to 128. So if you're going just Pro to Pro, or 10S to Pro this year, or even 10 to Pro this year, then you're getting a slightly bigger phone from 5.8 inches to 6.1 inches, so a bigger OLED phone, and you're getting double the base storage without having to pay more for that next upgrade, you know.
So
it's the 12 Pro is pretty compelling this year. It kind of feels like that's the value in the line, even though it's not the cheapest one. It's like that's the most bang for your buck in terms of how much stuff you're getting as an upgrade phone, because the 12 is the same size. It's just that the 12 Pro this year is bigger than its size class the year before and the year before that. So.
Yeah, and then the only other... Well, I guess you've got the LiDAR scanner, but then it's just like the cameras. Sure. So the wide camera is now 52 millimeter and it's f1.6. On the iPhone 11 Pro, and then the Pro Max, this is, again, we're in a year where the Pro Max gets features that none of the other phones do, so the big phone is best, just in raw specs, because it gets a 65mm telephoto with 5x optical zoom range. That's from 1x to 2.5... That's from 0.5x on ultra-wide to 2.5x on the telephoto. And the 1x camera gets a 47% larger sensor with an 87% improvement in low-light performance, and it gets... sensor shift optical image stabilization, which is better than the opto image station they were using because of reasons I don't understand.
Yeah, so the Pro Max phone this year is definitely the best camera in the lineup. The Pro is better than the non-Pro, right?
Yeah.
But the Pro Max is even better. And the things that you'll see... So the 5X range of zoom is a little bit confusing to me and like kind of disappointing, because when you look at it, they're comparing it from half X on the ultra-wide to 2.5X?
Yeah.
On the telephone, what they call telephoto, and so you're really going from 2x to 2.5x, so it's a little bit more zoomed in, but it's not that dramatic. Where it's like you could go to 2x, now you can go to 5x. It's not that. It's 2x to 2.5x, right?
Yeah, and this is in a market where there are Android phones that have like 30x, like
trickery, but
there are. You can get pretty high quality 30x zoom. Like I specifically didn't say you can get Android phones with 100x zoom, because that's a lot of it through trickery.
That's trickery. Okay.
But you can get like 10 to 30 times optical zoom on like a Huawei phone, for instance, and it's actually decent quality. Yeah.
So the better main, the wide camera, as they call it, not the ultra wide or the telephoto, but the main camera, that being... So that's a comparison against the 11 Pro Max, or is it a comparison to the 12 Pro?
Your 11 Pro Max they're comparing it to.
Okay, so 47% larger sensor, that's compared to last year's 11 Pro Max, 80% improvement in low light. Did we talk about the improvement in that main camera in the 12 Pro? Is it the same as the 12 is, or is it better than the 12 at all?
I think it's the same.
Yeah, and then the 12 improvement there was that in the main camera, it's 20% better at low light. So let's say 20% versus 87%. So there's a big difference there in terms of low light performance being better between the 12 Pro and then the Max. So the Max is about 60% better in low light.
Yeah, and that just comes down to the fact that the Max is a big phone, so they got space internally to put a bigger sensor for each of the cameras.
Yeah. Okay, that makes some sense to me, because if you look at it, you glance at it, it's like the Max is just night and day difference compared to even the Pro, which is frustrating if A, you don't want the bigger phone, or B, you don't want to wait 3 weeks longer to get that phone, because that's the difference in pre-order and release. So it's not that, it's not like night and day. It's just that compared to last year's phone, it's an even bigger difference, and compared to the non-Max Pro, or 12 in this case, or 12 mini in this case, then it's about 60% better in low light
than
if you didn't go max. And then the sensor size is what contributes to that. And then the sensor shift optical image stabilization, I'm glad that you described that as something that you're not so sure about, because that me neither. And that helps me. Like, we do know that image stabilization, like taking a photo, just holding it in the hand, is really good these days. And so I'll be happy to see in the reviews like what the comparison is.
Yeah.
But again, this seems like it's because of the size they can afford to do this, but it's not that it's a make or break situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to complain about the old, like current OIS on iPhone. Like, it's already.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, so they have the LiDAR scanner, which gives them night mode portraits and faster autofocus in low light, which is actually quite a nice feature. Like, given that we've come to today with basically zero uses for the LiDAR scanner, being able to have faster autofocus in the dark is good, because you know the iPhone struggles with that normally. But that's like the only other hardware feature, because they have some other camera features, like the ability to shoot in a RAW format that maintains like Smart HDR and Deep Fusion. They call it Apple Pro RAW, so it gives a raw file format, but with the computational photography sensor fusion stuff applied, but still allowing people to go and tweak it like you can with a normal RAW photo. But that's exclusive to 12 Pro and 12 Pro Max. And as far as I can tell, there's no hardware reason there. It's just purely a software thing, a software differentiation.
Yeah, I mean, there's a RAM difference in the phones that we learn about after the event, but it's you probably do less to do a Pro RAW. Like, computationally, you do less than you do to do a non-Pro RAW picture.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah,
because it's kind of like when you order fast food and like you ask for like no lettuce and there's still lettuce on it, and you're like, it would have been less work to not have it. but I guess it's breaking the workflow is what's different. In this case, if you do just a normal shot, there's more happening processor wise. Because if you do a raw shot, it's just like what it sees, and then Pro RAW is, you do get some benefits that you couldn't otherwise tweak in image capture, but you also get the ability to like do dramatic changes to the instructions of like how you view the photo, not just the final product. But yeah, you know, oh well. I mean, it's a good marketing feature for this in terms of it being a camera change.
Yeah, and I'm sure if you're like just a super pro photographer, you'll actually be able to get pretty good benefits out of that. But well, I'm not good enough at taking photos to know how to tweak the raw shots, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I think you've got to be like a very enthusiastic about iPhone photography, because just in talking to like photographers who you know compare iPhones to very expensive cameras, and it's like, you know, the raw stuff is frustrating. It's like, well, it's not really raw. And then there's the whole thing where you could do raw before in a third party app. It just wasn't an option in the main camera app. And in this case, it's half an option. It's kind of there, but it's still the situation. If you want to do like just full raw, you need to use Halide or something.
And they did say, by the way, that there's going to be an API, so Halide can actually capture pure RAW in their own app as well.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, Pro RAW. So before they're using just straight RAW, and this is like enhanced RAW. It's like RAW. It's like half RAW.
RAW plus, yeah.
Or RAW half X.
And they also now have in the pros, again, exclusive HDR video recording. So the kind of HDR effects that you get in photos, you can now get in video, and that's up to 4K 60fps. Apple will even save it in Dolby Vision, so if you play it on a HDR TV, it will look really, really good. And they made a big deal out of the fact that you can actually edit and apply video filters directly within the Photos app, so you don't even have to like do it on your Mac. You can crop the video, cut the video, trim it directly from within Photos, which is nice.
Now, is Dolby Vision HDR, that's also in the 12 though? Because I'm looking at the press release, and they say iPhone 12 features the first camera to shoot HDR video with Dolby Vision.
Oh, is that one on both? Okay.
Yeah, I think the keynote was tricky on that one.
Okay, so that one's on both. Yeah, I did check the Pro RAW thing. That's definitely exclusive. But
yeah, that's definitely on the Pro phones. That's why they call it Pro RAW. But yeah, they're doing HDR video, which HDR video, by the way, is really cool. Like, you know, we've learned since like the iPhone 4 or so what HDR, high dynamic range, can do to a photo, where you're taking a picture of a subject and there's like a bright light behind them, say the sun, and you can have the exposure, you know, the lighting and color and everything of the subject be correct, and to the detail in the sky, like you see with your eyes. And it's getting just way better now, where it's one photo instantly. To do that in video, to have HDR at all in video is really cool.
You're right. The 12 does do Dolby Vision HDR video recording, but it maxes out at 30 frames per second, whereas the 12 Pro and 12 Pro Max can do it at 60. So that probably is down to RAM.
Okay, yeah. And by the way, so 30 on the 11 Pro is what I shoot in, because you do get that better stabilization, I think. It's a toggle, and it's not an option on the 60, so we'll have to see. This is kind of when the phone's actually out, what are the options? And so, you know, can you do 60 smoother now on maybe the Pro Max? That's the what they mean by the new stabilization stuff? I don't know.
Yeah,
that'll be what's curious to see when these phones are actually all the way out.
And that's about it for the pros. Like, there really isn't that much difference, really. Like,
I did find it interesting that like you mentioned, LiDAR is not just for augmented reality using ARKit, but it's also for giving you features in the camera with it using, you know, literally the laser to know the distance of an object so that it can focus on that without actually seeing it in the camera. That's cool, because on the iPad Pro, it has LiDAR, but it doesn't do that. It doesn't use it for the camera in terms of taking photos. It just uses it for ARKit. And so in this case, it's using LiDAR all the same, but now for photos too, which is, if it was just for ARKit, then I think it'd be kind of boring. It's already pretty slim as to how they use LiDAR. But in this case, they're also enhancing the photos with it.
Yeah, I think it's pretty disappointing that they don't have, like, they still don't really have like a, like, what I want them to keep announcing is like AR maps, so you can get like directions in maps just by like holding up your phone and see where it points to. But they're still not really a built-in app that really does anything that would take advantage of a LiDAR scanner. Like, I know the Measure app, you can like measure the height of people, but like really, like something actually like that you actually want to use day to day. Now, one of the things that will probably maybe eventually be useful is the AirTags, but they're not shipping, so who knows.
Yeah. Now, I do like, just kind of zooming out again, but on the topic of cameras, is that last year Deep Fusion was like a slide, and then it was available in a point update to iOS, and it was just so invisible that you had to turn off the capture in the wide outside of the normal frame, to activate this feature. So it was very invisible. And then they didn't talk about it a whole lot. It was just, you know, photo science coming soon. And then it was available, and that was about it. This year, it's pretty heavily marketed, Deep Fusion, as a feature of all of the iPhones. And they explain more about it by, you know, saying pixel by pixel processing. You maintain sharpness and clarity in situations where you couldn't, and texture and detail are a big part of every photo. So I feel like they're doing a better job of talking about Deep Fusion this year.
Yeah, and this year it's available on all four cameras, whereas last year it was limited to the telephoto. To the wide.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. To the main camera now is all four, which is, yeah. So that's cool. Nice. Exciting.
Yeah, and so the Pro is, like you said, $128 for $999, or it's $1099 for the Pro Max. Because there's like stagger release dates here, it's a bit weird. But the 12 and 12 Pro, you pre-order October 16th, available October 23rd. And then the 12 Mini and the 12 Pro Max, the smallest and the biggest, they're coming later. Pre-order November 6th. Begin shipping November 13th. So
yeah, and so it's 3 weeks between the pre-order date of the 12 and 12 Pro to the 12 Mini and 12 Pro Max. So it's not a situation where if you pre-order on day one and you receive it on day one, that you could try it and then easily exchange it for the bigger phone or smaller phone if you wanted to. You could do that if you waited a week to order the phone, I guess. You really got to do, you know, plan it out though, because you do have a 14-day return limit. I think even in COVID times, there's exceptions that you can try to pull off, but they're not guaranteed. So I think in previous years, it's been easier to kind of order one, make a decision when the next one comes out and exchange it. In this case, there's that extra week between the gaps is not very helpful.
So today is Friday. It is pre-order day for the 12 and the 12 Pro.
Yes.
As you might be able to guess, I didn't order anything. I don't know if you thought that one was coming, but it wouldn't be my year anyway. Like, I'm on 11 Pro, I'm happy.
Yeah.
If they'd added promotion, I might have been tempted. But literally, anything but like promotion in the screen, I probably wouldn't even done it. So, and as you might be able to tell, I'm not too enamored about the 5G stuff. So, at the moment, I'm not buying anything. But I know that you, well, even though earlier this year you said you weren't going to buy anything, I know you're going to get one of these phones. The just question is, which one or how many different models you're going to cycle through before you end up on it? So as of Friday, October 16th, what have you ordered?
Okay, so I've got no interest in the Mini this year because I do find that the larger screens I'm happier with than smaller screens, especially when they become thinner and lighter. And in this case, you know, we didn't really talk a whole lot of maybe at all about the aspect that it's the redesigned phone now, that it's not rounded sides anymore.
Yeah.
It's the flat side, like a miniature iPad Pro, as rumored and everything. But it's a different looking phone than, say, the 10 through 11. So that's cool. But even so, the Mini doesn't quite appeal to me. The difference of looking at the screen itself, especially, you know, compared to the 10R and the 11, where the bezels actually are thinner because they're not having to do the LCD thing where it was very hard to do that. They called it liquid LCD or whatever.
Whatever.
And they had like the off-centered lightning port because had like a positioning issue. Now they fix all that stuff because they're all OLED across the board. But it's to cut off the sides of the phone makes it dramatically thinner looking because it looks like the phone is more edge to edge than ever, even if the bezels are practically the same.
The bezels are actually slightly smaller as well. Even on the OLED versions, they are smaller bezels still.
Yeah. Plus you cut off that rounded portion that made the width and height, you know, more than it felt like in your hand. So smaller phone, no interest this year. If all things were equal in terms of release date, I would have went with the Max, the Pro Max. The 12 this year is pretty tempting because it's so close to the 12 Pro. You know, they're the same screen size for one. They're both OLED. That's a big deal to me. But I do find, I've kind of discovered this last year when I tried to do just the 11, mostly to get the cool green color, that the 2x camera is a pretty big deal to me, and that there's enough times where I want to have that zoom that I miss not having it. And so I'm all about, you know, I don't care if it's called Pro or not, but having the what they call telephoto, having 2x zoom is a big deal to me. If, like I said, I would have went with Max if it was available today. The camera differences, as we discussed it, are more subtle than I even thought before. But I also use my phone as a camera a lot, so I would appreciate that. But because it's 3 weeks later and I'm eager to kind of try this out and use this, especially in a city with 5G, I thought about it and thought, you know, well, the 12 Pro, it's still a bigger phone than last year's 5.8 inch phone. So it's 0.3 inches larger diagonally. So it's still a bigger phone. It's kind of cutting the difference, not quite, but kind of cutting the difference between 5.8 and 6.5. And then 6.7, it's not impossible, I think, to once the new phone comes out, if I really felt strongly about it, make that change. But I think what I'll probably be happy with is just the 12 Pro this year. So I'm leaving the door open to try to find a path to 12 Pro Max once it's available. But it would be based on going and seeing in person and feeling like it's worth the hassle of trying to find that path. But for now, I think I'll be pretty happy with 12 Pro. And so what is the difference there from my 11 Pro, for example? It's that there is a bigger screen, so 5.8 inches to 6.1 inches. It's redesigned, so you go from the rounded style that you've had since the iPhone 6 to back to like the iPhone 5/4 design with the flat side. So I'm happy about that. The MagSafe stuff, I didn't order a MagSafe charger. I kind of just want to wait until the Duo is available because that's what's more compelling. And for $40, I'm like, I don't really want just a cord that charges it. And I'm very happy with wireless chargers that I already have. So, you know, I'd be happier with like buying one in the store than just ordering it and having it come before the phone. So, and they also showed, like in the keynote, they showed Belkin doing a 3-in-1 with MagSafe, and they showed a car mount for MagSafe too. And I do like that wireless charging. You go from 7.5 tops to 15 watts tops because the magnets is going to make sure that you're in the most efficient charging area. But yeah, and then I'll get the new blue color. I didn't do midnight green last year because I didn't feel like the green color was for me. I liked the mint green of the 11, but not the darker green on the Pro phone. But I love blue, and I like the blue in the Pacific blue color in the Pro. I like that better than the dark blue, kind of navy blue on the non-Pro. And that was also a factor, but the main thing is the camera difference. Having 2X is an option. I'll probably like go into an Apple store whenever the Max is out and play with the size and then play with the camera. And if I feel like it's different enough, then I'll see if there's a way to an exchange path.
Yeah.
But right now it's 12 Pro, the base model, which again, I was using the base model before, 64 gigabytes. So that will double now. And the only reason I'm able to do that is because of iCloud storage and offloading iCloud photo library. So iCloud photos. So this will be twice the storage for me for the same price. And I wasn't going to upgrade at all, like I mentioned, you know, but there was no Mac news. So it's at least another, you know, couple of weeks until there's a Mac to even think about pre-ordering. So it's like, well, this is this month's decision. I was more interested in the iPad Air until it was the same release date as the phones. And now I'm like, well, that's not quite as different as the phones, because in the phones, I'll get to test, you know, 5G in an actual city with 5G and, you know, see the new design and new colors and everything. So that's neat. And then on the day after the event, I dropped my phone and the back of it cracked. I was cranky is what happened. I was my daughter wanted me to drive her to the end of the street for the bus, and she was already dressed and ready to go, and she usually walks, and I was sleepy. And I kind of begrudgingly drove her to the bus stop at the end of the street. And when I got back, I was kind of huffing and puffing and like feeling sorry for myself. I don't know, whatever. And so I got out of the car and my phone was in my lap, and it hit the back of the phone, hit the pavement, and it cracked in a way that doesn't, the glass didn't break off, but there are visible lines under the frosted glass. So you can rub your finger all over it and not feel a crack or like any stinging or anything. But if you look at it, it's cracked under the glass or on the other side of the glass. You can't tell with the case on it, but that's not how I usually use phones. I didn't even buy a case for the 12 Pro because I think it's not for me. Like, I think it's going to waste some money for me. But I found a buyer for a little bit less than what the trade-in price was going to be. And so on the same day that I pick up the new phone, I'll be able to sell the current phone I have. So it's not quite $1,000. It's more like a $600 phone to me because of the upgrade. Yeah, so I'm content with that. I'm leaving the door wide open.
And AT&T, right?
Yeah, AT&T.
So does AT&T plan include 5G, or do you have to worry about that?
I don't know. My plan is like I pay like over $400 because it's a bunch of people in my family on my plan, and Apple Watches and like an iPad or two, and so it's a mighty phone bill. I'll probably have to pay more for 5G.
Wait, you pay $400 a month for phone?
So my rent in college was like not that much.
That is an almighty phone bill.
Yeah, it is. It is an opportunity to save in the future. But for now, I've generously paid for my mom's and my mother-in-law's and my partner's, and then I did my daughter's iPhone so that she could have an Apple Watch, and then the watch cellular and my cellular. So, and then there's maybe like one and a half phones on a contract, like the kind of like pay monthly things for phones that we don't have anymore because they're older. It'll go down in the future, but for now it's there are people.
Well,
in my life
is a very valued customer that you better get 5G for free, because otherwise that is a rip-off.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, next week I'm moving to Orlando and I'll have the phone by then. Let's see, Friday I pick up the phone in New Orleans. Saturday night I make the drive to Orlando, and Sunday I have my new place. And so next week we'll talk after I pick up the phone, but I don't think I'll have 5G experience. And then the following week I will have 5G experience if there's anything to experience. So the maps show 5G based on what road you're on, and it's like the main road. So it's not like there's a big circle. Are you in the circle or not? It's that these roads are serviced by 5G, and hopefully you're close enough to one. So it's kind of a mystery. Will I have 5G like where I live, or will we need to go out and use it, which is where it's more important anyway. But you know, I'm looking forward to the mystery of finding 5G and experiencing 5G. The real stuff, not 5G Plus. Or is that what they called it on AT&T? That's so 5GE, bad.
5GE, they called it on.
5GE, yeah. That's so bad because it's not 5G. And now it's really confusing. But I also felt like whenever Verizon was in the keynote this year, that was part of the calculus was, oh, they're punishing AT&T for doing their fake 5G marketing. And Verizon's being rewarded for not doing that. Of course, the ultra-wideband announcement makes more sense, and the nationwide turning it on makes more sense.
And but. I bet you'll see I bet this partnership is beyond just one keynote. Like, I bet they have co-marketing and advertising, and they'll have the iPhone. They have, where you see all the iPhone billboards and stuff. I bet they're all with 5G from Verizon with ultra wideband and stuff like that. I bet it'll be whatever deal Apple and Verizon made to that gave them that much prominence in the keynote event. It will include other stuff that isn't just a featuring in the event itself.
And I do hope that we see the next iPad Pro, whether it's the end of this year or beginning of next year or whenever it is, that's a 5G tablet too, because you want it in more places. And those are, I think, iPads and MacBooks, by switching to Apple processors, then they'll have they'll already have their modem for cellular that they've not had to deal with before. Before they could have done it, but they didn't. This time it'll be a lot easier to just do it anyway, just like they do for iPads. And so like we mentioned before, 5G and a Mac, that would be awesome. And those are things that you keep for longer than phones even. So the sooner that you can make those purchases, the better. And then speaking of Mac stuff, there's a rumor, because there was no Mac news at this event, even though we hoped for it. But we know that Apple's going to release, not just announce, but release the first ARM Mac this year, right? But before the end of the year.
That's what they said.
And so so there's a rumor. I think is John Prosser part of the rumor?
Yeah, he
said this is where it started.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's been pretty good with dates, so I certainly think that's true. November 17th as the Mac event. So I'm going to pencil that in my calendar, and until there's something official, then that's what I'm assuming. And
if you look at iPad Air, they announced that at the September event, and it came out for order today, which was basically the same week as the October event. And here they've announced the Pro Max, which you can order on the which starts shipping on November 13th, which is very close to November 17th. So they're sticking to their once a month schedule.
Yeah, it's like a season. It's like this is a TV show, and we're on the second episode, and then there's a third episode coming. And he's also said that there's a January event, I think, or maybe it was a March event for
AirPods. I don't really believe that Apple's decided if they're having a March event or not at this time. Or it's gonna that's way too far out. Like a November event's probably already scheduled and set in stone, but there's no way you can know if there's a March event and what day it's happening on. Like that's just ridiculous.
Okay, and then macOS Big Sur, it's still in beta. We just had the 10th beta version of that. They've added a bunch of really great wallpapers, including a new dynamic one that changes based on dark mode or light mode. And so still in beta, it's still got some issues. Like my Messages app, Messages is one of those Catalyst apps now where it's the iPad version adapted for the Mac. And I still have an issue where when you close one window, there's another window to be closed still. And so I've just got the muscle memory of Command W to close the Messages window. Most of the other bugs I've experienced are resolved. I still have an issue where if my audio is routed through a speaker that's not the MacBook, and then I still get alerts from mail and Slack from the MacBook speakers. And so that's to blame for some sounds sometimes. But beta 10, they're getting pretty close. And so we can probably guess that late November is going to be the release for Big Sur, timed with the release of maybe new Macs, which will be from that event. I could see November 17th being, here's the Mac information, and it's going to be the last week of December when you can order this thing.
Yeah, but it'd be like the iPad Air. It's available in December when they announce it on the 17th. Yeah.
Yeah, and like I mentioned before, not having any Mac news in this event and thinking it's going to be at least another month before we even get the news, much less the ordering, definitely influenced my iPhone upgrade purchase plan. Being able to sell my old phone helps a lot, but it's I've got another month before I need to spend money on the Mac that I really want, because I want the Mac more than the phone, but the Mac still isn't here yet.
Well, and the Mac that you really, really want probably isn't coming until next year, the 16-inch ARM replacement.
I don't know that I'll sell the 16-inch though when the ARM one comes out.
That's what I mean. Say if you could pick at the end of the year which ARM Mac you want to come out, you'd say the 16-inch MacBook Pro replacement, right?
Yeah, I'm still really tempted at like more portable Macs though. Like when I see a 13-inch MacBook Pro, which is not the thinnest and lightest, I'm like, that thing looks sleek and it's so portable. So if there's a 12-inch MacBook like type thing, you know, then I think I'd be fine with having my 1 terabyte 16-inch MacBook Pro all docked all the time like yours is.
Yeah.
And that's like my desktop Mac that can also move if I really wanted to, but not move it very often. And then having an ultra portable be like my portable Mac that I do most writing on, and then save this for like photo and video editing. And there are times where like having this MacBook kind of in the field is ideal, for like, capturing pictures from a camera at a rocket launch site, and then really quickly uploading them and processing them on the, before I even like get back to my home. There's definitely appeal to this, but, I every time I kind of get like bored with technology, I get really tempted to like, just pick up a MacBook Air, you know, and have that be like my just writing machine. But it would be unwise to do that before the new chips are out, because those will be amazing. So I'm not, but I'm definitely looking at something super portable. So if it's a 13-inch MacBook Pro this year, then I do, because then it's like, well, I really want something more portable, so I'd probably skip on that one and wait for the super thin one.
Cool.
Because they'll be pretty capable, even the super thin ones, because that's kind of like what ARM is the Apple transition is meant for, I think it will really show. So cool. All right, that is the 9 to 5 GMAC podcast, happy hour podcast this week.
Brought to you by Verizon.
How do you feel in the UK watching that? Like, it doesn't even apply. I really did think, like, as a US viewer, I thought, well, is there a reason to have Verizon over AT&T? Like, I've never had Verizon before. Is it better than in this case? And it's so not, because of how limited UWB is. But in the UK, like, what's the status of like 5G in the UK on carriers there?
Pretty bad.
Okay.
One carrier basically has 5G in some places. It's getting, you know, it's in London some places. Where I am, probably won't be around here till like next year, late next year at the best. Like, I still get like one bar of data service where I live at the moment. Like,
yeah,
I can barely get 4G sometimes. That's the situation. Like, the UK have been like dense cities, and that's better for the time being. And like you say, millimeter wave for this year is wholly exclusive to the American models, because they actually have like a special little antenna window on the side. Like, it almost looks like
the
Apple Pencil charger spot, but it doesn't charge. It's literally just a window for millimeter wave to work through. Outside of the US, all the iPhones won't have that window on the side, so they don't support it at all.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. All right. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Apollo Zach Benjamin. You are
BZA Mayo.
And you can email us together at happyhour@9to5mac.com. And we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.